It's time for Windows Weekly. Mary Jo Foley is off judging a Microsoft event, but Paul Thurrott is here, and there is a ton of news about Windows Phone Update 1 on Windows 8.1 and a whole lot more. We're going to talk about it right now on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 373, recorded July 30th, 2014. Sausage Fest. Windows Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code Windows to receive $10 off at checkout. And by IT Pro TV. Are you looking to upgrade your IT skills or prepare for certification? IT Pro TV offers engaging, informative tutorials streamed to your Roku, computer, or mobile device. For 30% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/ww and use the code WW30. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code Windows when you check out. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers Windows and all its companions. Well, there's really only one product now for Microsoft. One Windows to rule them all. Mary Jo Foley has... Hey, that's Paul Thurrott. Paul Thurrott's here. Hey, Paul.
Now we have one host.
Well, we figured if there's one Windows, what do we need two hosts for? No, Mary Jo has a week off. She will be back next week, I promise you. But Paul is here, and it's kind of like the old days. How many years did it just you and me for many
years? You keep asking this question. You think I'd be able to pull this one right off the top of my head. I want to say it was 2006.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a long...
Is that right? Or 2007?
No, 2006, sure. I think. This was one of the early shows.
Right as Vista was coming out.
Yeah, Vista was coming out. That tells you something right there. We were still using Windows XP.
We got off to a great start when you think about it.
Yeah.
Here you go, Paul. Talk about this.
It's been all downhill ever since. No, I'm just teasing you.
There are ups and downs with Windows, but...
Yeah, oh, well. What the heck? It's a good beat. You know, when I did the interview with Mary Jo Foley last week on triangulation, I said, do you ever, you know, wish you had a different beat? Because she focused on Microsoft back in the early 80s, in 83.
Yeah.
And has never left. And she said, no, I really actually like this beat. And there was a time when it might have been kind of dull for a while. Not now.
I went through phases with Microsoft over time. And, of course, you know, people who have been reading my stuff for a long time know that I was an Amiga guy and a Commodore guy. Before that, I looked down on Microsoft and its software. I scoffed at Windows. You know, the early versions of Windows, Windows 3, 3.1. I was not impressed by this stuff. And, Office, I guess it would have been like Office 6, you know, when Windows 95 kind of turned me around and all that stuff. And, you know, for a while there, it was going really good. And then the antitrust stuff happened, and there was a lot written about that, a lot of internal investigations around that. And you find out some really ugly truths about the company. And that was a real moment of truth for me because I was completely unimpressed by this company's business practices. So you kind of have that roller coaster effect. You go up and down. But it's the company, you know, that gave us NT. It gave us, the modern versions of Windows. And they've done some great stuff, too. So Office and all that stuff. I mean, no one's perfect, I guess. But
and we're not yet in an era where you could talk about computing or technology even without mentioning Microsoft. I mean, it's still... A huge part of this landscape.
Yep.
Let's start with the Windows Phone today. We'll save the Xbox stuff for later.
Yes, let's.
So I'm sitting here with my 1520 and waiting to see what's... Because I updated to 8.1 using that special trick you mentioned.
Yes. All right. So now I have a long story for you.
Uh-oh.
The official word from Microsoft was that anyone who upgraded to Windows 8.1 early with the developer preview would be slipstreamed right in when the wireless carriers released that software, and meaning that you already had 8.1, but then you would get upgraded to whatever the firmware your device maker would make, which in your case is Lumia Cyan, and then whatever carrier updates might come. So if I don't know if yours is AT&T or if it's unlocked or whatever.
It's unlocked. But, it's unlocked.
Okay, so
so I should get it as fast as anybody, right?
That's another gray area, actually. So the way this works right now is
iPhone's up to date, it says.
Yeah, Microsoft is not pushing the update to 15.20 if you have the developer preview on it. And that is supposedly temporary.
Oh, okay.
However, if you want to get it now, there is a process you can go through, which I've written about a little bit. I actually haven't done a huge step-by-step guide to it, but I did write about it. If you look down, let me see.
I'm seeing I have Windows Phone 8.1 version 8.10.12397.895.
So if you look in the show if you look in the show notes under the second heading,
yeah,
the first link says Windows Phone 8.1 rolling out with Cyan.
How do I even know? It doesn't say Cyan here.
It won't say it there. So if you back out of that, look at the back button.
Yeah,
scroll all the way down to the bottom.
This is my favorite part where Paul helps Leo. Yes,
and extras and info.
Extras and info.
That will tell you the
that's in here. Black.
In your case. Yeah, which is
so the level. Is that what I want?
No, you want Cyan.
Damn.
So, if you look at the show notes, the second hyperlink on the whole page, it says Windows Phone 8.1 rolling out with Cyan for Nokia users.
Yeah.
That is a story that I wrote about AT&T rolling out the Lumia Cyan and Windows Phone 8.1.
Yeah.
Since I wrote this article, it's also rolling out to unlocked phones and everyone
else. Yeah, because I'm on T-Mobile with an unlocked one. So.
But if you scroll down, it explains that people who are on the developer preview are not getting it.
Yeah.
And it explains how you can get it. And basically what this involves is using a Nokia software recovery tool to put your phone back to its factory settings.
You said I wouldn't have to do that.
You know, people say that to me, and I did say that, but Microsoft said that. I mean, I repeated it. This is what you get for being the mouth of Sauron, Leo. You know, it's like people, you know, like, I'm just the guy on the horse. I didn't, you know.
Yeah, no, I can handle this. How do I get this program? Do I have to go online? There should be a link there.
But the steps are, it takes a little while to do it, but the steps are actually fairly simple.
Wait a minute. I have to do this through a Windows machine?
Yes, I would think it's only Windows. Yeah.
Okay. Well, just gonna put this back.
Or you can just wait. I mean, it's gonna come.
Will it eventually? It'll do it automatically. Eventually.
That's what they're saying. Again, when that doesn't happen, I don't want you to come back and say, "But you said," because you know Microsoft said that.
So, is this just Nokia that we have to worry about, or other phones?
So none of the other phones have been updated yet, so it's not clear if HTC is putting out firmware updates on their phones, or if Samsung is, which I don't. I would be shocked, but, you know, you never know. I mean, at the very least, what you're going to get is some package from the wireless carrier that will include some stuff. And I noticed on AT&T what it was a bunch of crappy apps, and so nothing important. And, by the way, the nice thing about Windows Phone is you can delete all that stuff, so you can get rid of it. But on Nokia phones in particular, you really want the firmware update because Cyan is, in fact, a big deal.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really good features there.
So there's no way to reset the phone within the phone. You have to put this software on a Windows PC.
You can, but if you use the phone software, you're just going to go back to whatever version's already on there.
I see.
And so what this does is it puts it back to factory, which in your case would be, you know, Windows Phone 8 with whatever update. And then when you check for updates, you'll get update 1 because now it's available.
Got it.
Once update 1 is installed, you can then reset it using the phone software, right? And when it comes back that time, it will say, hey, do you want to restore from a backup? And since you've been you would want to make sure, but since you're probably backing up already, if you say yes, it will bring back all your apps, all your data, all your, you know, all your settings.
Or I could just take this phone and throw it into Mount Doom.
Yep.
And it will be destroyed permanently and we don't have to worry
about it. Well, it is a Nokia, so actually it's not clear.
Well, it may not.
That could, in fact,
This is for all Nokias, or just the 1520, or?
Well, the 1520 is the only one that is getting it broadly. I think there are a handful of other Lumias, not in the United States but around the world, that are getting this update right now. But so far here and broadly, this is the only one that's getting it.
And so Cyan is the thing I'm missing, really. But that's all right. I can live with it.
It enables a couple of things. I mean, in addition to just the features you get in Cyan, there's a lot of camera improvements, for example, which is really neat. There's a little effecty type things. There's like a kind of like a fade-in effect that occurs on the lock screen and this little things. it also enables a new generation of Nokia apps. And I'm sure some of them actually are available on the old version too, but some of the features in those apps will take advantage of things that are in Cyan. Sensor Core is one of them. There's some Bluetooth functionality. Some of the photo type stuff you might do in related photo apps like Creative Studio and so forth will take advantage of Cyan features. So there's definitely advantages to getting it. So someday, someday you'll be able to get it.
Somebody in the chat room is saying that the Cyan update killed his battery life on the 1520. Have you heard rumors about that?
No, right. But that doesn't mean it isn't happening.
Right.
I haven't seen that yet myself.
Right. No. China is getting Windows Phone 8.1 Update 1.
So this is actually the big story. So this is bizarre, but Windows Phone 8.1, which is a free update to Windows Phone 8.0,
yeah,
is now dribbling out to phones.
Yeah,
like I said, the 1520 is getting it. A couple of other phones. That's about it. But over the summer, everyone's going to get it. So of course, Microsoft took this week to announce the next update to Windows Phone, which is what they're calling the Windows Phone. I actually miswrote it there. It's the Windows Phone 8.1 update, which they're naming update to kind of match the Windows 8.1 update, but is in fact actually called Update 1. And there will be an Update 2 and an Update 3 and all that kind of stuff. This requires that you have Windows Phone 8.1, right? You can't go to this from 8.0. It will roll out over the next, 6 months or something. So right now we're all waiting for 8.1 to happen legitimately or through, publicly through the carriers. This thing likewise will have to be rolled out after that. And so for people who wait, normal consumers, you're probably not going to get this thing until November or December. It's going to be much later in the year. But for people on the developer preview program, and by the way, this would include you because this is separate from the Cyan update. You'll be able to get this next week. I think they said August 4th.
Huh. Is it the carrier? That's usually the carriers that are causing all this.
It is not usually the carriers. It is always the carriers.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I have yet to hear a definitive statement about how this works exactly. And by the way, I just asked, and they literally said, we don't know. We're checking. But basically, Microsoft releases this software to obviously the hardware makers, the device makers, and then to the carriers. The carriers test it supposedly on their systems, whatever, and they'll take the firmware updates from the device makers and they'll test that. And then they're the ones that kind of put everything together and with their stuff, the apps, maybe drivers, whatever. And then Microsoft is the one that rolls it out through Windows Update. Like actually Microsoft does deliver it, but they can only do it when the carrier okays it. So, and that's the holdup. The question is about people on unlocked phones, because the word we got, say a year ago, year and a half ago, was if you have an unlocked phone and you're not bound to any carrier, you should be getting this update directly from Microsoft. That theoretically, if Microsoft released, Windows Phone 8.1 on whatever day out in the wild and you had an unlocked phone and you maybe didn't even have a SIM, you would get it that day. And to my knowledge, that has in fact never actually happened. So it's actually really unclear when unlocked phones get it. You have a phone, you said, on T-Mobile. T-Mobile has never sold a 1520.
No, yeah, I just bought
it. So T-Mobile is the one that would have to okay the release. Would they okay it for just their specific phones or for all phones? It's not clear. And so
yeah.
I'm still waiting on the official word.
This one is like some, it's, yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, it's a weird gray area. For whatever it's worth, I've owned several unlocked phones. They all do get upgraded at
eventually.
Some point.
It's, yeah.
It's just not clear what the schedule is. And like I said, even Microsoft doesn't seem very clear on it.
Still love this 1520, and it's fine. I'm not,
I think I talked about this a couple of weeks ago when I was in D.C. I was walking around with the 1020, which of course has the really high megapixel camera. It's wonderful and all that kind of stuff, but that camera is very slow. The machine itself is very slow. And of course, now a year later, it's a little more pronounced. It's much slower than the 1520, which has a comparable camera. But when you walk around at night, this wonderful camera, which in most situations is so great, is complete garbage at night.
No, like really?
It adds too much light to the picture. You can manual setting it to death. You're never going to turn. It does this strange thing where it takes the picture and it's got this nice kind of dark quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then flicks, and then the light version comes on, and that's the one that gets saved to disk. It's doing some kind of processing, and it's really irritating, especially for night photos. I've had problems taking pictures of, you know, night scenes, like we were on an island in Boston Harbor one night, or fireworks, or you're walking around a city at night, you want to take pictures of lights or whatever, D.C. at night a couple weeks ago. It's just terrible, and the 1520, I've only done a few experiments with it, side-by-side against the 1020 with the Cyan update, which improves low-light performance. A major, major improvement in that kind of thing. And so I'm eager to get it out, you know, maybe when I'm away this month.
Good, 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 good. How's Windows Phone doing? I mean, I know outside the U.S., I mean, inside the U.S., not so great, but it's always done better outside the U.S. How's it doing in China? How's it doing in these
areas? So U.S. and China, obviously the top two cell phone or smartphone markets in the world. Actually, I think China's already
China and U.S., yeah, the other way around.
Yeah, just said the other way around. These are the two markets, actually, that Windows Phone is not doing well in at all. And that's really interesting because I, you know, without knowing too much about how the world works, you'd have to think they're going to have to do well in one of those markets to succeed, right?
Right.
Because that they probably represent half or something of the market or whatever it is. So far, not so good, which is why we're seeing an update one, this major push on the China end. Because when you combine these kind of Chinese-specific features with this push for low cost, which is huge in China, you know, phones you buy outright and don't have on a contract, and then some other features that are just kind of related to things that occur in China. So, for example, they've added support for Cortana in China, Mandarin Chinese. There's an optional UI where it has like a little alien-looking face, but the point of it is that it has eyes, and those eyes can be expressive. And apparently that's a big cultural thing in China, that they want to look at something and they want to see it react.
Really?
And that's important to them culturally.
Interesting.
And so they've added
eyes.
Yeah, but it even supports features that just don't seem obvious at first that are important to China. So, for example, the biggest mobile carrier in China is China Mobile.
Right.
China Mobile actually supports two different network types. They have one that's on GSM and one that's on CDMA. I believe they're probably migrating from CDMA to GSM, but they have both at this time. We know that dual SIM phones are a big deal in emerging markets because people like to switch networks. But to date, all of the dual SIM Windows phones have been two GSM SIMs. For the China market, they're supporting CDMA plus GSM. So you can have one of each. And what this allows someone to do is be on China Mobile, the biggest carrier in the biggest market, and be on the existing plan that they have, and then later move up to the more expensive and faster plan and have their existing phone just work because they can just switch SIMs. And or they could even do mix and match. You know, some people have like one SIM for work and one for home, and maybe work pays for that stuff or whatever it is. And so this update one for Windows Phone 8.1 supports stuff like that. And so to us here in the United States, you kind of listen to that and you think, well, cute, you know, whatever. But I mean, this is a big deal because they really do want Windows Phone to be successful in China.
Non-trivial making Cortana work in Chinese, I would guess.
Yeah, I would think so too. Yeah, I'm curious about that. Joe Belfiore went to China and I guess demonstrated this on stage somewhere in Beijing, but that happened at 3 o'clock in the morning my time, and I'm not even sure it was broadcast live. So I haven't seen it yet, but I was told about it. And it seems pretty cool. 8.1 update one has a bunch of other Cortana related improvements. You know, for the United States, it's supporting UK English, and I haven't seen this in action, but apparently it has UK voice and accent, and even like a UK personality. So there are certain oddities, if you will, to UK. Let's face it, people from the UK are kind of messed up,
right?
Weird.
I think they're just, you know,
it's just, they're not even really.
They don't want eyes, they want teeth on Cortana, and that's just strange.
Right. I got into a great argument with a woman from London about eggs that were over easy, and she understood what it meant, but she refused to acknowledge the fruit. because, you know, they invented it.
There's only one kind of egg in England, it's overcooked.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no over easy. You can have it over.
Over.
It's not going to be
over easy. Or it's not. And there's not much spam in that. Have you seen the Cortana ad?
Yes.
Let me play it here just so we can comment upon it.
So this is, you know, Siri and Cortana being asked the same.
Cortana, when my wife calls, remind me to tell her happy anniversary.
Next time you talk to Caroline, I'll remind you.
Oh, no, I cannot do that.
And remind me to get roses when I'm near any flower shop.
Sure thing. Remind you when you get to flower shop.
I can't do that either.
Cortana, it's going to be a great night. Oh, wow. Thanks for the traffic alert. I better get going.
Now that is a smartphone.
That they shouldn't put words in Siri's mouth. That's just mean. Just mean.
So, I think I was actually pretty fair-handed about this ad when I wrote about it. The Siri responses were canned. Although, to be fair, I asked these questions to Siri on my own phone.
It can't do that. No, it can't do that. Yeah.
But you know what? Siri's optimized for certain things. And so Siri works really well for whatever things that Apple did. And obviously, they improve it over time.
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft did the same kind of optimizations for Cortana. And Cortana responds really well to certain things and then, you know, has no idea depending on what you're asking.
Yeah, you can make this ad in both directions just depending on
what you want. That's exactly how I look at it. Yeah. That said, I mean, I think it's important for them to advertise.
Oh, sure. I don't know if people even know Windows Phone can do that. I mean, I think that that's a new feature. And
the other thing that's it's subtle, and I don't think most people would have caught this, but, you know, obviously an iPhone 5S is a high-end smartphone. It costs, you know, $650, unlocked, whatever. The phone that they use in that ad is a Lumia 635. You can buy that for $99 right now. Wow. No contract.
Wow.
It's a really low-end phone. Cortana works just fine. It doesn't require high-end features or anything like that. And, you know, as with the 520 last year, the price of that thing is going to go down dramatically. I would expect by Christmas you'll be able to pick one of those things up for $39 or something. So I almost wish they'd highlighted that aspect of it. You know, that they could have asked a question about how much the phone cost or something, and Siri could have babbled out her answer, because that, to me, is the bigger...
Wouldn't that be good? Yeah.
The bigger deal, yeah. Right? Because that one's a little less defensible on the Apple side. I think the voice control stuff, you know, first of all, let's be fair, Apple did get there first, although I know someone's going to write me now and talk to me about the Windows Mobile stuff, but, you know, mainstream usage, you know, if a tree falls and no one hears it, it doesn't really matter. You know, people are actually using Siri, so... It's out there in the world. It's a big deal. That's why Microsoft is targeting it in an ad. But, you know, whatever. I mean, it's an ad, you know. So it's a little one-sided, obviously.
Yeah. What else? We've covered...
There's all kinds of stuff. A1 update one is huge. Like, there's more Cortana stuff. There's Cortana alpha availability in Canada, India, and Australia. And that's... UK or US English only, which is why it's alpha. Windows Phone is going to support smart covers, like you see on the Android side, where applications on the phone can integrate with a cover and run little mini, you know, front ends to apps and so forth. I think that's a big deal. Support for new screen resolutions and sizes. Oddly enough, nothing above 1080p, which is a little odd, but support for 7-inch screens. So today the upper end is 6 inches, which is what the 1520 is. 7 inches is, that's mini tablet category, isn't it? So I think by the holidays, we're going to see possibly, you know, like a phoneless Windows Phone device of some kind on a 7-inch screen. I've said
this
before in the past.
Wait a minute. Like, you mean like an iPod Touch kind of? A phoneless?
Yeah. Like I guess I would call it like an iPad mini.
A mini tablet. Know. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, obviously today those devices are running Windows 8, full-blown Windows 8.
Or RT, if that exists
nobody
anymore.
Uses. Right. But I think we can all, well, I don't know, we can all agree, but most of us would agree that Windows Phone would be a much more suitable choice for such a device. It has an amazing games catalog. It's got all those great Nokia apps.
Yeah. Why not? What do you need RT for, really?
Yep. Yeah, so I hope to see that, and I was very interested to see the 7-inch screen thing. They're going to have live folders, which work just like folders in iOS or Android, if you're familiar with how that stuff works. You know, you drag an icon onto another icon, it opens up, you give it a name, you know, you can have photography and productivity and whatever you want to do in there. The only difference is that these are live tiles, and so you can resize the folder tile as you can with any tile, and it's live. And so if you have live tiles inside of it and they're giving you notifications, those notifications will come through the live tile of the folder. And so it's kind of a... Same thing as before, you know, that other people do, but with that cute, you know, kind of Windows 8 touch on top of it. They're fixing Xbox Music. I think we hammered this to death a couple weeks ago, but let's just say that Xbox Music on Windows Phone 8.1 is not good. And they've heard the criticisms, and they're going to work on that. So somebody pointed out to me that one of these features, which is like a live tile that has like a now playing type display on it, was available in Windows Phone 7, which I actually don't remember, and I'm sure that's true, but that kind of gives you an idea of how far this thing has fallen, because now they're putting back features that were there 4 years ago. So they'll get there. Some of the stuff, though, so there's a bunch of stuff. I guess we don't have to go through the whole list, but I do want to highlight a couple of things that are kind of unusual and I think will be interesting to people, because there are kind of these enterprise type features that, when you think about them in isolation, could benefit end users, right? One of them is like a VPN. And so people use VPNs for work so that they can access a private network over a public internet usually. The idea being that you're in a coffee shop or your home and your work is in a different state or a different city or whatever, and you need to get to corporate resources on their network. And so you kind of tunnel through the internet using a VPN. And that's typically how those things are used today. But Microsoft's adding a consumer VPN to Windows Phone, so that when you are on a public Wi-Fi network in a coffee shop or an airport or hotel, you're still tunneling through the internet. And so there's probably a small speed sacrifice that occurs, but now you can't be hacked from the outside. Like what you're transmitting can't be intercepted by hackers who might be on the same public network. And when you think about it in that light, like this is actually, this should, like all computers should do this. Like this would eliminate, or at least help eliminate, a lot of the electronic attack type stuff that occurs every single day. I mean, this is actually a smart, like,
what is the endpoint though? You need a VPN server to connect to.
It literally this requires no infrastructure.
Interesting.
It is literally just a
Microsoft
switch on the
must
phone.
Be doing it then.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, you just have to pass everything through the data centers. It's really safe.
That's actually, yeah, well, you have to trust the
it's
other
like that,
end.
But... you know, the Amazon web browser. If you just let us intercept all of your traffic, we'll turn up the
speed. I'd like to know more about this. I mean, because this is the first time I'm aware of anything like that in a smartphone.
Yeah.
You can buy VPN service. We have a sponsor, you know, that does that.
Right.
But,
and you can, you know, if you use a PC, you know, like, and I do this on the road all the time, you can use like a logged in type VPN and access a computer at home or a server at home or whatever. And those solutions are either low cost or free, depending on which one you get. But it does require, two endpoints. So, yeah, I don't know.
Somebody's got to host the server.
Yeah, I'm sure it's Microsoft. So the other one that's sort of enterprise related, but it just brought down to individuals, is this the right feature? Yeah, Apps Corner. And Apps Corner lets you configure your phone for unique usage. And so consider like people today, like you're a local flower merchant, or you sell, you know, cheese at the local's farmer market or whatever, and you use like a Square device to scan people's credit cards. And the way that works today is, you know, you use your own phone typically, right, or your own iPad or whatever device you have. And someone makes a purchase, and then sometimes you'll hand the device over to them, and they have your device, and that's your device, and it's got your stuff on it, and they could look at your email. And, you know, maybe it's like a retail situation where you want like a kiosk mode or something like that. And so this allows a Windows Phone user to specify that this is happening and that nothing else can be accessed. And so if it's we don't actually support Square, but we support Square-like things on Windows Phone, retail situation, you could basically say this thing's locked down until I enter my PIN. You can only access that retail app, and that's it. And they can't get to other stuff on the phone. Or maybe you want to set up a kiosk or a retail point of sale type thing. And same deal. You don't want people getting into the other stuff on the phone. Or maybe it's a kid's phone, and you just want to say, look, you can access these apps, and that's it. And here's your start screen, and these are the apps you get, and you can set it up like that. And so it's kind of an extension of the parental controls functionality in Windows Phone in that sense. But it's really, again, designed for really small businesses or individuals who just don't have the kind of mobile device management functionality that you might have in a big enterprise or whatever, and gives them some control over this stuff in ways that, you know, I think people will find really useful. So that's kind of a cool one too. I'm trying to see if there's anything else in here there's so much stuff. It's, you know, wearable devices will be able to send notifications to the phone over Bluetooth, which is something you see on other mobile platforms. That high voltage charging support. So there's a Qualcomm quick charge standard that's, I guess, charges existing phones very quickly, will be supported. And, you know, that kind of stuff. So there's a bunch of stuff like that. But
I like the eyes on the Chinese.
Yeah, the little. I want to see that animated. Version. I'm curious. Like, does it?
Does it move? And, yeah. So this is instead of the circle, the burning circle that we see for Cortana in the U.S.
Right. Right.
And I guess it's China only. Although they say they're not going to use the same voices. Obviously, they're not going to use the same voice in China or in England. So.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah, I wonder if they are using the same woman and they're having her, you know, speak in different languages or speak with an accent, or if they, you know, I don't know how they handled that.
Just go out and get some other person.
Yes.
Do it. I'm really curious about this VPN. I've been searching around on TechNet and stuff. I can't really seem to get any clarification.
They literally just announced it, and there's this might have been. Did they even announce it in the blog post?
Because of course, before update one, you could use VPN, but you'd have to configure it to use, you know, to go to your work.
VPN
server.
Yeah, and Windows supports like kind of a VPN functionality, but it requires certain kinds of VPNs, and it does require that endpoint. It's something that your business would.
Well, they always will. Somebody's going to be running a VPN server somewhere. And your traffic will emerge from that server. So it's kind of not irrelevant where your traffic is going.
Right.
I'm very curious. Huh? We'll find out more. Hey, let's take a little break. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley has the week off. We're talking about Windows. There's lots more to say, including a big update for Xbox, I hear. We'll find out about that. I've been playing Destiny. Like it.
Yeah, how do you like that?
Love it.
Yeah.
It's another first-person shooter, but it's a fun one.
Right.
I'm not sure how I would characterize it as different. It's from Bungie, so it's very Halo-like, you know.
Yeah. So, is it Call of Duty, though? Because I really like Call of Duty. Yes.
It's not called Call of Duty. It's called Call of Duty Destiny.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds good.
That you'd get.
That I would get. Yeah.
Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. When if your destiny is to start your own business, LegalZoom's there to help. LegalZoom will help you get the legal stuff done that you need to get done to make your business work, whether it's an LLC starting at $149 plus the state filing fee, or an incorporation, S Corp or C Corp. I did that at LegalZoom, and we're still using those papers we set up in 2005. They help you set up to a registered agent in the state and all the details that you need. Trademarks, too, very important. If you're you're just a blogger and you've got a clever name for your blog, you don't want somebody imitating that. Trademarking is easy, it's simple, and with LegalZoom.com, it's affordable. LegalZoom's not a law firm. It's better in a lot of ways. They provide self-help services at your specific direction. If you're like me, when I was first starting Twit, I didn't have the money for a law firm, but I also kind of wanted to, you know, do my own thing. LegalZoom helps you do that. And as far as your family goes, you know, most Americans don't have a will. I do not know why not, but you really need to get one. You don't want the court to say what happens to your property, your kids. Don't put it off. You got a will? Uh-oh. Go to LegalZoom.com. It's not too expensive. $69, very affordable. Doesn't take much time. You walk right through it. And with their guide and help, it's so simple. LegalZoom was developed by some of the best legal minds in the country. They make it painless for you to get the help you need. In fact, they've been doing this, helping people become legally protected for over 13 years now. It's their mission. It's their passion. August is National Make-A-Will Month. A lot of the stuff we talk about, you know, backing up and things is kind of, I know people don't want to talk about this stuff because they don't want to think about it. But if you don't think about it, then it's not going to happen. Doesn't mean you're going to die tomorrow. You have the whole month of August. Protect your family. Protect your future. I'm just kidding. LegalZoom.com. I've got a couple here with a five-year-old, and I'm looking at them, and they're saying, you could do this in the hotel room tonight. Use the offer code WINDOWS and you'll save $10 on your legal needs. Also get access to their network of legal plan attorneys if you have some questions. I don't think you will. I think this is really straightforward and easy, and you should do it. LegalZoom, developed by top attorneys to provide self-help services at your specific direction. Again, not a law firm, although they do offer legal help through vetted independent attorneys. LegalZoom.com. Peace of mind. Start your business, trademark your blog, and make that will you owe it to your kids. And you say, "Well, I don't have kids." Hey, what about your pets? They'll do a pet protection agreement from $39 too. Well, it's really true. People don't think about this kind of stuff. What happens to Fido if you're not there to feed him? LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code Windows. We thank them for their support. Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Leo Laporte, Mary Jo Foley has the week off, which means we get to talk about the stuff we care about. No Hadoop today.
That's true. There's
Windows
no Hadoop
phone today. And Xbox One, baby.
Yeah.
What's Cricket?
So, Cricket is one of those kind of third tier wireless carriers here in the United States.
Oh, Cricket. Yeah.
So, this is just kind of strange. I mean, every month I cover this ad duplex data that they have for Windows phone usage, you know, which phones are the most popular in which countries and so on and on and on. A lot of interesting data that these guys compile. This month, really, there isn't much going on, but there was one interesting thing, and that was that for the first time, Cricket appeared on the charts, and they already have 7.3% usage share. They just came out with one Windows Phone model, and that model is the Lumia 630, which is, which is crazy. And so the 630 is also the one phone that's kind of made like big gains on the chart.
That's the $99 one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Cricket is a pay-as-you-go, I think. AT&T owns them, MVNO. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. Low-cost phone. People are going in there. Maybe they want a smartphone, but they don't want to spend a lot of money.
Right.
On a data plan or on the phone. I think this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of that was interesting. I'm really just pulling out the one interesting thing in this month because, Leo, you won't be shocked to discover that Nokia dominates the Windows phone market. Yeah, 94.5%.
Who is the other 5%?
Jeez, it's spread out.
I mean, HTC still makes a Windows phone, right?
Yeah, HTC, and Samsung, and Huawei.
Where's Cortana when we need her? Huawei. So there also is a new, what is it, the 530? What is that? Is that another inexpensive one or is that a...
Yeah, so
I figure the lower numbers are less expensive.
Yeah, that's usually accurate. This is a weird one because the best-selling Windows phone of all time was the Lumia 520. That came out last year on AT&T and then its variants like the 521. In fact, in the United States today, over 50% of all Windows phone users are using a Lumia 520 or 521, which are identical, essentially. AT&T and T-Mobile. Really popular phone. So in China last year, they released something called, and I think later in other markets, but not the U.S., they released something called the 525, which was basically the 520 body, same specs across the board except for one major difference, was a gig of RAM versus 512, which is not super important, to be honest, but I think it's more from a future-proof perspective. And if you look down the list of, say, the top 20 games on Windows Phone, you somewhere around position 14 or 15, you'll start to run into a game or two that requires a gigabyte of RAM. And so, a minor thing, but I think kind of a big deal. And so when we flash forward a year later, Microsoft has released a Lumia 630 and a Lumia 635. And basically those are just variants of the same phone. The 630, I think, supports dual SIM, but basically the same phone. And some pluses and minuses versus the 520. Bigger screen, low resolution. It supports SensorCore technology, which we'll talk about a little while later. I'm testing the 635 now, which is the T-Mobile variant of it. And it's a great phone. It's a great kind of 520 successor. It's, I think, more applicable to more people because it's got a bigger screen and so forth. And that it seemed like we had kind of settled on how that was going to go. And then they announced the 530. It's like, what the heck is this thing? And sadly, the 530, despite having a bigger number than the 520, is in many ways a lesser device. It's a much lower end phone than even the 520 was. The processor's better, but it still has 512 megabytes of RAM. It still has the tiny screen. It only has 4 gigabytes of internal storage, which, by the way, is a first for Windows Phone. One of the features that's in Windows Phone 8.1 Update 1, by the way, is the same feature that's in Windows 8.1 Update 1, which is the ability to compress the OS much further so that it fits better on small capacity devices. And so I just confirmed with Microsoft, this device does not ship with Update 1, but four gigs is going to be woefully inadequate. You'll want to get a micro SD card to expand it.
And you can't put games and other stuff on there, really. Can you put apps on there?
Actually, now you can, yeah. In 8.1, you can. So actually, you can move stuff, not every single app, but you can move almost everything that's already on the phone there.
All right.
But still, you know, 4 gigs is not, 4 gigs is not actually okay. That's way too little. It doesn't have a hardware camera button, which is garbage, and neither does a 630 or 635.
It doesn't even have a camera.
Yep, and that was true of the 520 too, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Well, but it's not for us, Paul. I mean,
oddly enough, this is going to sell in the U.S. And so I think this is the phone you're going to see for $60, $40.
This is the burner phone you see in the drugstore.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We need
smart burner phones.
Yeah. It should be sold in a blister pack. You can buy it at CVS.
Get six of them.
It's like, I need some razor blades, a canister of film, and a burner phone. You know?
It is a quad core processor.
Yeah, I know. Remember when that was so impressive?
1.2 gigahertz. It is kind of impressive. 1.2 gigahertz quad core.
Part of it, yeah.
Yeah. But who cares if you've got 512 megs of RAM? What are you going to do?
That's crazy.
So, but it's just interesting. So what they're doing is they're putting off the storage to a later purchase that doesn't show up in the bottom line on an SD card.
I don't even need to see this to tell people that if you have the choice, get a 630 or 635. Those are much more capable phones, more feature proof. They still don't have the hardware camera button, but more internal storage, the same expandability, and additional technology in the phone like Sensor Core. There are just advantages to it. And it's only, we don't know the real world price of this thing in the U.S. yet, but there's probably a $20 to $30 upfront difference. You're going to have a much better experience.
Is 512 megs of RAM enough for Windows Phone 8.1?
Yeah, today it is. But see, that's the thing I'm worried about is the future. So when 512 devices first started appearing, I think they made that change with Windows Phone 8. There were a bunch of apps and games in the store that did not support that low level of system resources because, you know, no one had to kind of custom tailor their apps for that. But actually, they've made great gains since then, and you don't see many apps that require a gigabyte, and you only see a handful of games that require it. And they're the kind of higher end ones you would expect. But
they're not going to run well on this anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, and by the way, you know, you're playing a game on this like little screen. You know, you're going to be better off playing
4-inch screen.
Yeah, it's small.
God, who makes a 4-inch screen? Wait a minute, Apple does.
I know, whatever.
Whatever.
Certainly no company with
crazy talk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the iPhone.
Right. Oh, that one.
It's kind of
that sells pretty well, doesn't it?
It's doing all right. It's amazing, though, how quickly that size was left in the dust.
When the iPhone was first released, and I think the original one probably was 3.5 inches, something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, it was advertised as being a ginormous screen. You know?
Right.
And, you know, when you compared it to those little square screens like a BlackBerry would have or like a Moto Q, that was a big screen. You know, but of course, it's when you're touching it a lot, you're blocking the view a lot of the time, too. So
it's really interesting how, in general, in technology, you can... If you take your eye off the road for 5 seconds, you can be the whole world can move.
Yeah,
and I think Apple for a long time thought, oh no, you really don't want a bigger screen, and they just were wrong.
Yeah, it's funny because not to get off on an Apple tangent, but I do think about this stuff a lot. You know, Apple I think too was so used to leading these industries for so long and being right all the time. It's interesting that in recent years, things like the mini tablet and the phablet, which, you know, in some ways are merging into one thing, were two major market trends that they didn't foresee and openly mocked, you know.
They mocked it. They literally did.
Yeah. But
I guess YYZ in the chat room says
Microsoft's always been in. You know,
Apple has saddled itself with a 2-year design cycle, and that probably is too long a time frame at this point. I mean, 2 years is an eternity. Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, they're going to have a bigger
phone. They'll adapt.
In September. Bigger phone.
Yep.
By the way, good deal if you want the 635. I like this. You can get a Fitbit Flex.
Yeah. So my tip of the week is related to this in a way. But This is kind of an interesting deal. I guess I didn't put this in there. I believe you can also get the 630 or 635, I can't remember which, from T-Mobile for $99 if you want just the phone.
But if you were going to get also a Fitbit Flex, $150 for the Flex plus a 630. If the Flex is $100.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure I'd say run out and get a Fitbit Flex, but still. And, of course, they're making the point here that this supports Bluetooth. It's Bluetooth LE. Is that what it is that it requires?
Yep.
I think so.
Yep.
And what do you call it? Senso-round?
What do I call it?
What is
that? No, that's actually unrelated. I'm going to get to that in the tip. But, no, so Windows Phone 8.1 plus Cyan supports the ability to talk to these wearable devices, and so, or to any Bluetooth LE device. And so what that means is you can do real-time sync of data.
Ah.
You know, like you can do that now on an iPhone or an Android device.
Yeah.
Windows Phone, I actually don't think you could sync the device to it. I mean, the Fitbit app just came out, but you could use a third-party Fitbit app. And I don't think you could, I don't remember, but I don't believe you could even sync the device to it. I think you needed the LE support.
Yeah, LE is kind of how.
But now it's real-time. It just happens. You run the app and it syncs.
You know? And you never sync. Yeah, it just doesn't. This is exciting. There's an HTC. I didn't see this HTC event in August. And you think? Do you really think it's going to be a Windows?
Yeah. Phone? So there's been a lot of rumors about this, and I got invited to this, and all. But the interesting thing about this is all the Windows guys got invited to this, which is why I think this is a Windows Phone event. Well, that combined with the rumors, and so unfortunately, I'm going to be away. I'm in Barcelona when this happens.
Aww.
I think it's August 19th ish. But the rumor is that this is going to be the HTC One, the M8 version with Windows Phone. It's going to be the same exact.
That's sweet. The hardware platform is fabulous.
And this is fabulous. The thing I've been calling on phone makers to do for years. You know, in the past, HTC would take one of their phones and they would change the body, but they would use most of the internals and they would call it something else. And I thought, well, you know, you can do that, but that's a lot of work. And what we really want over on the Windows Phone side is that phone. But Windows Phone 8. And so I think that's what this is going to be. So stay tuned for that. It's about 3 weeks from now. The invites just went out. So I'm going to miss it. Mary Jo's going to go. Daniel Robino will go.
Oh, good.
And I'm sure I think Brad might be going. There's other people going. So
what's the date?
It should be August 19th.
And we will. Okay, good. That's good. And we'll cover it. We'll probably cover it live if we can.
Is it in New York? That should be a good one.
Is it in New York?
Yep, New York City. Yep.
Yeah.
19th is a Tuesday.
All right. I'll make a note of that.
Yep.
Very, very interesting. Yeah, that's
I would
a good
have liked
idea.
To have gone to that. Yeah.
Is the 8X is really a repurposed Android device, isn't it?
I believe that the 8X is the original HTC One, or what was the
one before the M7. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever that was. Yeah. I think it's the same. I think, but, you know, and I Mary Jo and I went to that event where they announced the 8X and the 8S, and that would have been 2 years ago, something like that. And at the time, you know, Nokia hadn't really turned anything on with their design yet. We saw some big clunky phones from them, and they were interesting, but not, you know, they weren't everywhere yet. And these things were really thin and light and gorgeous, and they felt nice, and they were in really nice colors, and they were talking about how they had customized the phone to match the UI, and it seemed like that was the case. And they were just beautiful. But, you know, HTC kind of came out and they did that, and then you didn't hear anything from them again for 2 years. And so the difference between them and Nokia is that Nokia, of course, their life, you know, depended on it. But they came out with 27 accessories. They came out with 100 different phones. They came out with all kinds of apps. I mean, Nokia just, you know, exploded onto the scene, and HTC and everyone else just kind of did nothing. And so I think this is the right approach for a company like HTC. They already make beautiful phones for Android. Just give us the phone. Don't make anything special. Don't spend any extra money. Just put it on there. It's perfect.
Well, it may be non-trivial to do that. I mean,
okay, but I mean, in other words, don't take the additional steps and extra time and money.
Yeah.
Just you have made a beautiful phone.
Right.
Put Windows Phone on that phone.
Arguably the most beautiful phone on the market today.
You're not going to hear any complaints from Windows Phone users about that. You know, and you'll get users. Those phones are beautiful. So
the 8X is the 1X. They're telling
is that what it is?
Tyann, okay. Colty, and the gray area.
Yeah. I mean, it's been so long, I can't even remember what HTC might have had back then. But
Who knows? Lots of app updates.
Shows on it. But by the way, all this Windows Phone stuff.
Yes.
This is just from this week.
Amazing.
since we talked last week, all of this stuff has happened.
Yeah.
So I only list a handful of apps here, but many, many, many apps were updated in the past week in major ways in some cases. Beats Music, Facebook Beta, Facebook Messenger, Nokia Video Tuner, Nokia Hear Maps, Nokia Creative Studio 6. I mean, on and on it goes. Lots and lots of updates. Major new apps have been released, the key among them being Fitbit. So the first-party Fitbit, the actual Fitbit app, feature parity and functional parity, I should say, basically with Android and iOS. I have a Fitbit I've been using, you know, for several months. You can update it on a computer, which is kind of garbage. You got to use a dongle and all that stuff. Or you can update it on a smartphone. So if you have Android or iOS, it just syncs. You run the app and it syncs. It's great. Now that works in Windows Phone. And so that's a big deal if you use a Fitbit. When Microsoft announced Windows Phone 8.1 back in April, one of the things they talked about was this low-level support for lock screen apps that was in the OS, but it was going to require apps. And they were going to release their first app sometime in the coming months, and then they were later going to open up those APIs so third parties could release lock screen apps. So they put out that app. It's called Lock Screen Beta. It's kind of some kind of pluses and minuses to it. It's not necessarily as far-reaching as we were hoping it was going to be. And I think what's going to happen is that third parties are going to jump in with their own designs, and this stuff's going to explode. But this ability to basically replace the lock screen with a new kind of lock screen, which can feature different designs and different animations. You know, if you swipe up on a screen on any smartphone, there's a kind of a set animation that occurs. With this thing, it could be like a spinning clock that kind of expands open as it spins, or it can be, you know, words that, you know, kind of move in, you know, different directions. It's got kind of a nice set of possibilities to it. And so the Lock Screen Beta app, as its name suggests, not quite finished, a little rough around the edges. Performance isn't always great. I actually had a crash one time, and then you go back to the regular lock screen. But it's out, and I think that's a big deal because this is going to be the start of kind of a revolution of how the lock screen works on Windows Phone. And so this is the first step down, you know, something better.
Actually, really, one of the great features of Windows Phone 8 is the 8.1 is this lock screen. Because I can have, well, I like have my Facebook pictures on it, which is nice, and they rotate.
Yeah. So the way it works now is you can customize the picture.
Right.
You know, and you can choose which little sort of notifications you get.
Who provides the picture. Yeah. And then
most of those notifications.
Like I have calendar here. And,
yeah.
But that's it. And then you swipe it up to get out of
So this thing lets, this new set of APIs lets you change the whole thing. And so everything can be different.
That's cool.
And so you're just seeing the tip of the iceberg on this new app. The APIs will eventually be made public, and then anyone can do this. And I think that's when it's going to explode. So, again, baby steps, but what is it? Four months, whatever, since April. We're getting there.
Yeah.
And then just the last, but not a big deal, but, Nokia this year has, announced a bunch of little hardware-y type devices. They have like a Nokia Tag device for finding Bluetooth stuff. They have a device hub app in the store, in the phone rather, now that lets you manage the devices you connect to with your phone and find the apps that work with those devices, which is actually kind of cool. And they've always done a really good job with portable wireless speakers. They don't actually, you know, make them themselves, but they sell them, you know, with their name on it. And I've owned numerous Nokia speakers. I don't have this one yet, but these things, it's funny, like for how small they are, they always sound awesome. Like, we have one up in our bathroom. Like, my daughter listens to it, you know, when she takes a shower or whatever. And, you know, I listen to it like a podcast when I'm shaving. And, like, the quality of these small speakers.
It is little. When you put it next to the phone, it's teensy.
Yeah, they're really, but they're
like
really
a matchbox.
Nice. Yeah. They sound really good.
And it's NFC, so you just tap it, phone to it, and it pairs it up.
Right.
I like
If you don't have
that.
NFC, you can use Bluetooth, obviously. But or you can plug in a wire. You know, it does all that stuff.
I think it still uses Bluetooth. NFC just does the pairing.
Does the pairing, that's
yeah.
Right. Look at you being the only person on Earth beside me who understands that.
It's just the two of us, Paul.
It's a handshake,
okay.
Leo.
Yeah, it's a
it's
handshake.
It's a virtual handshake.
Yeah. I don't know what phone this is. This looks like the 520. I mean,
it's probably a 630.
It's not a big phone. And this is tiny. This is what, like 1 inch by...
Yeah, that's a 4.5-inch screen, 4.7, something like that.
Yeah, tiny C.
Yep.
1.5 inches high, it weighs 6.3 ounces. And you're saying that has decent base?
Yeah.
And it comes in lime green, orange,
these are like the 2014 Nokia colors, you know?
Yeah.
So it supports, like, you buy like an orange or green phone or whatever.
Oh, yeah, matches your phone.
Match it. Or you could get the other one and just have kind of a cool contrast.
Good price, $250 is good for a Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah. Yeah, with NFC, too. You know? No, I mean, it's not bad.
All right. We're going to talk about Surface in a moment when we come back. Paul Theroux is here. Yes, you probably could tell. Mary Jo Foley, if you're listening, no, she's not fast asleep. She's just not here.
I'm not just talking over this time. She's literally not here.
We should just put up a screen of her snoring. Sure. And then she'd be here. And every once in a while.
She just occasionally try to get a word in.
Our show today brought to you by our friends at IT Pro TV. I love this company. They, partly because they have paid homage to what we do here at TWIT by creating a TWIT-like environment for learning IT, for getting ready for those IT tests to get your certification. So, I really like this idea. It's an easy, entertaining approach to online training. And affordable. I think they should emphasize the affordability. Now, they're on air right now. I see the red blinking light on their page at itpro.tv/ww. I'll play it right now, and you can see what they do here. Tim and Don and the gang, and they have a lot of different trainers. The set kind of looks like the screensavers. There's a Leo bobblehead over his left shoulder. There you go. Now I know they're serious about copying me, even down to the Leo bobblehead. But what's fun is you could put this on your Roku. You could watch it on your tablet, your desktop. If you subscribe for a year, you can download it and watch it on the airplane. Let's press play again. And notice, by the way, they've got a chat room going, so you can join people in the chat room, ask the instructors questions as they go. It's the same kind of interactivity we have here. And what do they cover? Everything. Everything. Here's the course library. Go to the free content so you can see sample episodes and look at some of the classes. But they do the CompTIA, prep for CompTIA's A+, NetPlus, SecurityPlus, the CASP classes, Strata, Linux. They've added those in the last couple of weeks. Microsoft, you can get your MCSA, your MTA, your MCSE, Cisco certs. These new ISC squared security certs. They have a great trainer doing their security stuff. It does not have to be boring to get. Oh, look, they've added some Office courses: Word, Excel, Access, PowerPoint, Outlook, Link, and there's also Mac stuff that's in production right now. VMware, they're really expanding. IT Pro TV, you get to interact directly with the hosts during the live chat, web-based Q&As to specific topics. They break down all the courses by page, by question, so you can study for that part of the test you're worried about. One low price gives you all-access membership with daily updates. It is such a great deal. It starts at $57 a month. You know, that's like one book for this stuff. Or $570 if you want the whole year. And do get the year, because then you get to download the shows and put them on your tablet and take them on the airplane with you. You can also take the Measure Up practice exams. That's included free with your subscription, worth $79. Virtual Machine Sandbox Lab environment lets you practice hands-on with any HTML5 browser on any OS. I could actually launch the... I don't want to get involved. But I could launch the lab, but you can see the servers, you see the clients, set the whole thing up. So you can really practice this stuff without risking your own machines. These guys are great. They have over 10 years of experience in IT learning. And they've just done, I think, a spectacular thing that's easy and affordable. And I mentioned $57 a month, but if you use the offer code WW30, you'll get 30% off your subscription, and that's not just for a month or a year, that's forever. That makes it $40 a month, $400 for the entire year. That is a great deal, much less expensive than a technical academy, even than just buying the materials, and a best way to study. Watch it on your Roku, and you'll absorb it. itpro.tv/ww. And then the offer code is WW30 for 30% off. If you're ready to get a cert, you want to tone up, tune up, get ready to get a better job, this is a great place to go. Or just for fun, if you really love IT. itpro.tv/ww and use the code WW30 to save 30%. And we thank them for their support. Of Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly is on the air. Paul Theroux is here. Mary Jo Foley has the day off. Let's get into the Surface. You know who bought a Surface?
Let's move on to Topic 2.
Topic 2. Phone was like, man. Whew. An hour of Windows Phone, baby. You see, when Mary Jo's not here, we get to talk about the stuff we care about.
Yeah, baby.
And we had Jerry Pournelle, the legend, Chaos Manor legend on Twitter on Sunday, and he just bought a Surface Pro 3 and loves it. Now, he uses OneNote, I think.
So somebody wrote me about that, and one thing I know about Jerry from years and years back is that when Microsoft first came out with the tablet PC, he was an early adherent to that. And he bought one of those compact Transmeta-based tablet PCs.
He bought, really? Wow.
It was a gorgeous machine, but was slow. It was like
horrible.
Glacially slow. It was awful.
Yeah.
And by the way, he used that thing for almost a decade.
You'd see him at Comdex. You'd see him everywhere.
Every time I saw him at a show, he had that thing. Yeah. Probably not a decade. 5-7 years.
He didn't use it at home, but it was his travel thing. Yeah.
Yes. And he would write on it. And I mean, he loved that thing. And so... someone had written me and told me he was on Twit and, you know, was talking about the Surface Pro 3. And I have to say, I'm not surprised to find out that he loves Surface Pro 3, although I have to wonder whether he must have terrible vision now. I mean, I hope he can.
He said he can see it. The other thing he is, and now here's a guy, and if you don't know the name Jerry Pournelle, of course, great science fiction author. He taught aeronautics. He's a brilliant guy, psychology. But he also wrote the column that inspired me to get into this business.
Yep.
In Byte Magazine. It was called Chaos
Manor. He's one of two guys that are the reason I do things the way I do things.
Exactly. I mean, me too.
Yeah.
Because he was user first. He was the ultimate user.
He was the user. I have some great, I have boxes of Byte Magazines, and I have... Yes. His early books, which were collections of those stories. But my favorite Jerry Pournelle line from, 30 years ago probably was, I make the mistakes so you don't have to.
Right.
You know, which I cannot claim. I just make the mistakes because I'm a freaking idiot. But I can communicate those mistakes. And then maybe you will not make them.
Yeah. He loved Office 365, too. And now here's a guy who's been using Office since probably Word 1.
Oh, yeah.
And he thought Office, and I agree with him. I think Office 365 may be Microsoft's best achievement.
A lot of the stuff he used to write about back in the Byte days was him running over to Larry Niven's house and installing the latest Chromenco,
S100,
whatever the heck it was. And as writers, those two guys, and Jerry Pournelle in particular, were adopting technology as early as possible because, you want to make this better. Anyone who has ever typed on a paper and then had to go back and hand edit the edits and retype the page and do all that stuff understands why any writer would embrace a word processor first.
And a revolution.
The ability to write anywhere in the world with a portable device that weighs a couple of pounds. You can stick in a bag. It's a transformative technology. So I was always fascinated. As a writer sort of myself, not the same kind of writer as he is, obviously, but as a writer of sorts, I was always fascinated by his depictions of his use of and Larry Niven's use of technology. I always loved that stuff.
He was at Niven's Sunday, and Larry joined us for the first 5 minutes of the show. Yeah, so if you're a fan, we're not worthy. I mean, and I didn't.
Larry Niven is.
I didn't want to say. I mean, I love, of course, the Niven Pournelle collaborations, and I've read them all.
Yep.
But I also love Ringworld. Larry's incredible.
Ringworld is obviously, I mean, it's, 2001, Rendezvous with Rama, Ringworld, whatever. But
classic.
But you know what? This kills me. You still can't get the Niven stuff on an ebook form that I really want to get, which is he wrote many, many, many collections of short stories, which are among the greatest things I've ever read in my life. And I will find this stuff. Larry Niven is amazing. He's right up there with Asimov, and
I agree. Obviously. I was so
love Larry Niven.
I was a fanboy, big time.
Yep.
That's an example of something that you would probably want in book form anyway, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you want to have your wall have the Ringworld saga line here, take a shelf on your bookshelf?
I used to want that, but I just want it. I want it anytime I could get it. I used to want it.
Anyway, let's talk about Surface.
Sorry.
You spent the night at the Mandarin Hotel with Surface, I'm told. Does your wife know? Yes.
Yeah. Hmm. So the Mandarin Hotel, if you're not familiar, is a luxury hotel chain, and they have hotels in London.
We have one in San Francisco, and I've stayed at the Mandarin in Paris, and it's amazing.
Gorgeous. Amazing. In fact, a little too amazing for me, because I'm about as blue collars you can get.
I kind of walk through the lobby like, oh, yeah. I'm staying here.
So they're deploying all this Microsoft technology, and they're doing a really good job of it. I have to say they're partnering with the right companies to make the apps, and they put Surface Pro 3s in rooms, and they're doing, you know, wireless streaming and in-room service and all this stuff, and it's great. The hotel is fascinating on another level because it's just so nice. And, you know, JFK showed me my room, and that was weird. And then, you know, like, it's just such a nice high-end kind of experience. It's not the type of thing. I don't usually go to a spa, you know, when I stay in a hotel. But, you know, the way they
You don't get a mani-pedi? Come on, Paul.
No, Leo, remember, last time, that very trip, I stayed in a hotel where I was drying my shoes in the bathtub like a homeless person. You know, they came home in a plastic bag and smelled like wild animals. This is how I travel. So, no, not usually.
You put your shoes outside the door, and they said, "I'm sorry, Mr. Thurrott, we don't shine cardboard shoes, but nice try."
We would light these on fire, but we're pretty sure they would catch.
Soggy.
Yeah, they're a little wet, smelly.
Wow.
yeah, the bomb sniffing dogs probably would have went nuts. I got lucky.
But that's a nice hotel. So you didn't do a spa treatment.
No, but I checked out the technology stuff. And what they're trying to do is offer people another option. And I think of technology in hotels like I think of technology in cars. You know, that airbags and all that kind of stuff. It's going to happen in Mercedes first, and then it makes its way down to Ford. And hopefully in the next decade, the hotels I stay at will have this stuff. But they're doing something neat there, because obviously some people will want to pick up a phone and talk to someone. But some people might want to just get on there and say, yeah, and look at a menu and say, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I want this kind of eggs and I want this and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you can get your shoes shined.
You can do that on the phone?
Yeah.
Is it a big LCD screen? Or?
But now you can do it on the Surface.
Oh. Do they put a Surface in the room?
Yeah. So there's a Surface Pro 3 in the room. It's locked down. You can still sign in with your account if you want to get access to your own services.
That's cool.
You can blast the screen up to the HDTV if you want to do that and watch movies and stuff.
Oh, that's neat.
You can order food. You can order other hotel services. Learn more about the hotel. Learn more about the area. All that kind of stuff. And the really, to me, from sort of a technological standpoint, the neat part about it is if you reboot the machine or if you just check out electronically, it resets. And it does it – by the way, it does it in about – 45 seconds. I mean, it's like some crazy amount of it's so fast. I don't even know. I don't actually know what they're using. I got questions.
It's
about
not steady state not be, or I mean,
it's not the, you know, PC reset. It's something
they have some built in thing for
higher
them.
Level. Than yeah. That. But yeah, it's impressive. I have
that
to say.
That is neat.
So, yeah.
That is really neat.
Yeah. It's a neat little thing. So, you know, I just came back from Quebec. I didn't have internet access the entire time I was there. We were lucky to have hot water. And now I go to this hotel where it's like a Larry Niven book. And I'm thinking to myself, clearly there is going to get to here someday. Like, I mean, it has ruined me seeing this, how beautiful this is, you know? So maybe someday.
There's one hotel in up here in Napa that has, I think, gives you an iPad when you check in.
Okay.
And it's funky. I think that this is a better way to do it because of the power wash. You could use a Chromebook too.
Power wash is a good term.
The power wash is nice.
I asked them about, I said, look, I have to ask. I said, everyone in the world has an Android device or an iPad or an iPhone or whatever. I mean, you know, why'd you go with Windows? And the guy said, you know, we looked at everything. You don't understand. There is nothing like this anywhere else. And this is like Microsoft and Tier A partners of Microsoft working with us on this. If we went with like an Android solution or an iPad solution, we would have had to work with mom and pop shop that may not be in business tomorrow. Like the types of apps that we have to make are very specific, and they have, you know, they come from a very specific industry. They have to work in a very specific way. We have to not just respect privacy, but like really prevent any tampering of any kind whatsoever. Like, this is Windows. Like, Windows does this. These other ones don't do it. You know, an Apple device would probably have an easier time projecting a display, or, you know, they have different technologies for different things. But as far as the whole overall solution, basically he just said, you know, there was no other choice, and this is as good as it gets.
That's interesting.
It was interesting. Yeah.
The airport in Istanbul, the first class lounge had Surface. I think the original Surface. Yeah.
Wow.
And it, they were all broken.
Yeah. Love that. You bastards.
but I think you're right. I think for the fact that if you have a Microsoft account, and maybe a lot of business travelers will, the fact that you can log in and now it's your system.
Actually, that was the other thing he said. He said, you know, most of the people stay here are business travelers, right. Which I found to be amazing. I'm going to try to slip a Mandarin hotel night into my expense report and see what anyone notices.
Business travelers and high-tech hookers, and that's pretty much it. Yeah.
But he said... They're all Microsoft customers.
I believe that, actually. Yeah. No, I believe that. Yeah. That makes sense at a hotel. It's in D.C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the other thing, Leo. So they haven't rolled this out in the Washington, D.C. location yet. But because of the problems I had with internet access on my previous trip, I said, let me ask you a question. I'm just curious about this kind of thing. Typical hotel, like a big hotel. When you think about any given floor of that hotel, how many internet access points would you say are on the floor? And he says, two or three.
Wow.
He says, that's why, depending on where you are, you know, you can be bad. Really crappy access.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
Of course, everyone's hitting it and, you know, it turns to crap. And I said, so how are you going to handle this? And he says, oh, we have one internet access point in every single room.
Yeah. That makes sense. Like, yeah.
What? You know, and the funny thing is that capability. Oh, and he says, take it a step further. In that other hotel, like the one in Quebec, the way that they find out the internet is down is somebody calls and says, hey, I can't get on the internet. And then some guy with like suspenders on goes upstairs and unplugs a router and then plugs it back in. And what they have in this hotel is some bank of electronics that proactively monitors these things, can tell when one is failing. They replace them proactively. They reset them before anyone complains because they know it's failing or has failed or whatever. No one ever has to call them. Like, they just monitor it. And I'm thinking to myself, you know... I don't stay in the right places because
must be brand new though, right? This is a brand new hotel.
And like I said, they haven't done it yet in DC. This is in some other locations.
Oh, okay.
But he was saying, look, an internet access point is $200.
Yeah, why not? That's one night.
It takes to pay off something. Like, half my God, a night. Like, you know, it's just the right thing to do.
The Mandarin in Paris, you had a baguette and a bottle of wine and you were happy.
Yeah. I went in there, the ice container had ice in it.
Oh yeah, like, yeah. They prepare the room for your arrival.
I don't
arrival.
Have to go pat around
Isn't
in my bare
nice?
Feet to go get ice.
That spoils you because now I get in a hotel and there's nothing in the ice container. I think, jeez, come on,
there
guys.
There were slippers, Leo. I don't even have slippers at home.
Paul didn't want to leave.
I know my flight was at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
You know
how
awful it was in this place.
You check in, but you
don't
want to check out.
You know that scene like you're trying to get the dog in the car and he get all four legs on like the corners of the door and he doesn't want to go in?
That was you, huh?
That was like the bellhop trying to get in the taxi.
Mr. Thurrott, you have to leave.
You really have to go.
You have to go.
Yeah,
so
bad.
We should talk a little about China. There's been a lot of China news. And yes. We did mention Cortana being a new Windows phone in China. Apparently, there's going to be a $100 Windows laptop. Didn't China say, don't buy anything Microsoft ever again?
Yeah, basically they did. They also said that about Apple, by the way.
Well, I know.
They're insane over there. Yeah. But there's kind of a xenophobic thing going on in China right now, which...
Well, what they do is they pirate it.
Well, this is a country that is spying on everything American imaginable, not just the government, but also our corporations and all that kind of stuff. And obviously we're spying on them, too. I heard there were news stories about this. People that are doing the same thing to each other can't really call out the other for that activity, right? I mean, we're doing the same thing. It's just the way it is. And I just don't understand that aspect of it. But the reality of the situation is that for now, at least, most electronics or many electronics are made in China because of the labor conditions there, the lax laws related to environmental concerns and human safety and all kinds of other things.
And it's just cheaper. Labor's cheap.
It's cheaper, yeah. So China's the kind of place where you're going to see a $100 Windows laptop pop up for the first time now that Windows can be licensed for free. And when you think about it, that is shocking at first, but actually it kind of makes sense.
Yep. Yeah. And it's not from Microsoft, I guess. That's the...
No, but obviously it's running Windows 8.1. It is a low-end device in some ways, but it's quad-core like Bay Trail processor, gigabyte of RAM, 16 gigs of storage.
What? For $100?
Those are low-end specs. But remember, Windows 8.1, Update 1, so that's the one of the things it supports is these really low-end kind of things. So it has an SD card slot, 8-inch screen, 1280 by 800, which is the same resolution, if I'm not mistaken, as a Dell Venue 8 Pro.
Yeah.
Which is a great tablet.
Yeah.
So, you know, look.
But it's not running Windows 8. It's running Windows 7?
No, no. It's 8.1. It's
Windows 8.1. But I thought they said we were not going to buy any Windows 8.
That's on government computers in China.
Oh, this is, so the people can buy.
People can sell.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep. So, you know, we got a year and a half ago or whatever, got that first Windows mini tablet, the Acer W3, I think it was called, which was an absolute piece of crap. But, you know, if that thing was $100, I think you could make the argument, like, whatever, it's $100. And this thing looks really nice. It actually looks kind of like an iPad mini. You know, we'll see. I mean, it looks okay.
Wow.
$99.
Wow. And it's probably made in China.
It's made in China and sold in China, yeah. They're probably saving on the shipping or something. I don't know what the deal is, but...
Let's see. Yeah, Surface Pro 3 gets high marks for its screen, but low marks for repairability.
Yeah, I didn't provide a link for the latter bit of that, but...
iSupply does this. Yeah.
Yeah, iSupply does their teardown thing, and what they found was that this thing was... You know, it's like stuffing someone into a prom dress on prom night that doesn't quite fit. You know,
and
it's
gluing like, the parts down.
Just don't touch anything. It's kind of tenuous.
You're glued into your dress.
Yeah. You don't get to be thin and light unless, you know, you do a little bit of squeezing.
Everything is this way. Yeah.
But DisplayMate tested the screen, and what they found was that this thing was, like, awesome. Which, by the way, you know, I've always been fascinated by this kind of analysis, right? And they looked at the physical qualities of the screen and, you know, how pixels are displayed and how they put it together. And that's all really interesting. But the truth is, all you need to do is look at it, you know? And that was one of the things that was very striking to me about Surface Pro 3 when I first saw it, because I knew that a bigger Surface Pro was coming. I didn't know exactly how big it was. When I heard that it was 12.5 inches or 12 inches-ish, I was thinking, oh, that's too bad. It's a little smaller. I figured like 13 would be the kind of Ultrabook size. 14 would be even better. But there's something about the quality of the display. And you have to see it to understand what I mean. But it's crisp. You know, it's just, it's really nice. It's
Who
just
makes
a
the part?
Screen.
Do you know? Is it an LG? Is it Sony?
That is actually an excellent question.
Yeah, it's also 3.2. So the size is not as meaningful. Right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, and this seems kind of illogical, but, you know, if you think about, like, a widescreen display and maybe you wanted to put two things on it side by side, you would think that would work really well. And it does. It works fine, actually. But there's something about 3x2 when you put two things side by side where, you know, it's obviously a little thinner. And it's got more of a kind of a, like, two portrait-oriented kind of displays. For me, that really works well. If I'm doing something like reading a web page, writing an article, I really
They're not too small?
Like that. No, it works great. In some ways, it's the first machine where, you know, using that kind of Windows 8 Snap type feature to me made sense. Like it, I'll put the desktop on a big display on the big part of the display and have like just a thin strip on the side with Twitter. You know, typically, there's something about it where it just seems to work well. There's also, you know, there's a goofiness to Windows if you use the desktop a lot, which I do, where the screen will auto-rotate, I should say the display of the screen will auto-rotate as you rotate the device, unless you turn that off. If you have a bunch of floating windows in the desktop, you've just hosed every single one of them because they all kind of collide up into the corner because they move with the display as it moves. And then you turn it back and they don't resize back to the way that they were, which I find really irritating. But when you're on a 3x2 display, the difference between this and this is not as stark because it's like a square almost. And so the effects of that weirdness rotation on the desktop only problem, which has nothing to do with the quality of the display, I know, but is just, it's not mitigated completely, but it's just not as bad. So there's a lot about it. You know, there's a lot about the, that screen orientation that is unusual when you hear it for the first time, but then you see it and you realize like they're kind of onto something here.
I wonder if more people will do it.
Yeah, I hope so. I had heard that the Mini was this kind of a screen, you know, for example, and
the Mini.
One of the things I like about the iPad Mini is that it's not this super tall 16:9 display. It's 4:3 or
it's 4:3. It's 4:3, which is not squarish. Quite the same as 3:2, but
it's wider in its portrait orientation, which I like, and it's close to 3:2.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Apple's point is that a piece of paper is 4:3. 16:9 is video. So if you're working on it, and I think this is true of the 3:2 as well, if you're working on it, it kind of makes more sense, really.
As opposed to watching movies. HDTVs make sense because you're watching video content on it pretty much exclusively.
Right.
It is interesting to me that we've gone completely to 16:9 on PCs for some reason, when in fact, you know, this is not necessarily super productive, you know, stuff side by side, but
Xbox video updated for what?
Yeah, so this is a little bit of a weird one, but if you go back to the original release of Windows 8, they did the same thing which Microsoft did previously with Windows Phone 7, which was that they made a bunch of panoramic apps which look beautiful and are actually completely terrible to use. And so in Windows 8.1, they updated the Xbox Music app to just be like a regular vertical app, you know. So there's a kind of a menu bar over on the side, and whatever it scrolls up and down like a normal app would, instead of having this crazy big panoramic experience. But oddly enough, Xbox Video and Xbox Games never got the update. In fact, Xbox Games wasn't even restyled with a darker color scheme like the other apps, so it still looked like the original one from 8.0, which still to this day bothers me. This week, suddenly, and without any, you know, announcement or any indication it was coming, they updated the Xbox video app. So now it looks like Xbox Music. And so it's not just the same color scheme, which it was before, which is basically black, but it shares that kind of portrait orientation, vertical scrolling. It doesn't, you know, it's not a giant panorama. And so maybe in 18 months, they'll fix the Games app too, and we'll be all up to date on it. They're moving really slow on this stuff. I don't know why.
Did we not say that after the quarterly, didn't they say something about the stores in the quarterly call that implied that they weren't all in on retail? What was it? I forgot.
Yeah, actually, I don't remember either. And Mary Jo, I remember when this happened, the store story, she was surprised by this because there were some, you know, Microsoft, we don't talk about this much, Leo, but they don't do a good job of communicating. And
no.
Yeah, I know.
Shocking.
I wish I should take some of the blame. I don't mention it enough. But they during that conference call indicated that maybe Xbox Music and Xbox Video were going away. We've heard since that's not the case. And then we've heard since, actually, we're updating all those apps in a major way. And so, you know, with the Windows Phone version of the Music app is getting a huge update soon. The Xbox Video app on Windows, like I said, just got a big update. I mean, they just don't do a good job of communicating this stuff. And so I don't think anyone would claim that Microsoft stores have gone gangbusters thus far. But I really do think, you know, you can make all these arguments about different product lines being investments and being important, even if they're not direct, you know, huge successes. I really feel like retail store is a big part of that and falls into that category, because anyone who's walked into a Best Buy will tell you that it looks like Mad Max in the PC section. Like, there's broken glass everywhere. It doesn't, you know, dust, like nothing works.
Dust bunnies blowing in the
wind. Yeah, like there's a wolf crying in the background somewhere. You know, like these are like Microsoft's partners, right? Like they don't do a good job of portraying these products. And so I think, you know, just like Apple before it, Microsoft needs a place where they can say, look, it doesn't have to suck. You know, we sell these machines that have signature versions of Windows on them. There's no garbage. None of the machines are broken. There's no broken glass. There's no wolf pulling a child behind a counter over there. It's nice in here. It's clean, you know, and
that's why Apple did it. That's why Apple did it. And it's been a big success for Apple, right?
Yep. So the story is, anyway, so they're opening, they're not just not scaling back, or they're not just, you know, walking away. They're actually opening 13 new stores.
Fooled you.
Throughout the year. Still not in New York City, by the way, which I know is a sore spot for Mary Jo Foley. And
why not? Do you think? Is it too expensive?
Like, seriously. Like,
Apple has two, to me, two or three
we're
stores.
We're going to launch a major retail initiative. I don't care what your business is, but we're going to start with one store. Where would you put it?
Yeah.
Like, you would put it in New York City.
Yeah.
Every time.
Apple has Grand Central Station. They have south of down in Chelsea. They have, and they have the Fifth Avenue store.
There's no excuse.
It can't be too expensive.
I don't care how expensive it is. You have to be in New York City. That's crazy.
It's just so they're
not,
it's odd.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, New York City's not on the list. Yeah. A couple places in Canada.
13 new stores. So did we misinterpret what they said in the quarterly call, or must have?
I don't remember what they said.
I don't either.
I will chalk this up to them not doing a good job of explaining themselves anymore. They will say, you know, two of the miscommunications that came out of that call used the same phrase, which was, streamline.
Right.
We're going to streamline. So they probably said something like, we're going to streamline our retail operations,
Right.
And when you say something like that, is what that means to most people is you're closing stores.
Right.
Whereas what Microsoft meant was,
we're
not going to have as many employees per store. We're not going to have as many employees on the back end. We're going they just don't do a great job of explaining that stuff.
Yeah. Arizona, Louisiana, Maryland, Cerritos, California. That's a big area.
If I'm not mistaken, the first Microsoft store was in Arizona, and I think it was at the Fashion Square Mall in Phoenix.
Yeah. Well, that's a city. Canoga Park, Durham, Alberta.
Chinook
Center. Very odd. Calgary.
Yep. Yeah,
it's just odd. Woodland Hills Mall in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, Tulsa.
Tulsa. The Eaton Center is big in Toronto. That's a big one. They had one, I think, in the suburban Toronto before, like Etobicoke or somewhere. It's very odd.
It is very they have strange.
But obviously there's a strategy. This is not random.
I love that you are assuming that, and you could be right. Actually, you know, the guy who runs the store stuff is really smart.
There must be some strategy.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
It's just not apparent to us mortals.
It's so smart, I can't see it.
Yeah. All right, what else do you want to talk about here? I'm looking at the list.
The only other thing, this is more, I just reviewed a couple of kind of tablet/hybrid computers. But the thought here is not so much about the specific machines, but rather this notion that when Windows 8 launched a couple of years ago, you know, PC makers obviously came out with regular PCs, but they also came out with these tablets, you know, including Microsoft. And nobody bought them, you know, so they went nowhere fast. Last year, the big trend was mini tablets. And so Microsoft jumped right on that one, as they usually do, like a year late. And some of them sold okay, but, you know, we found out in the past week or last week, some of them not so much. And, you know, Lenovo, for example, is not selling its mini tablets in the U.S. anymore. And they'll restart that with the next gen that comes out in the fall. But as of now, you can't buy a Lenovo Windows-based mini tablet in the United States. And it seems like the wider tablet market, and now Windows as well, has gone back to full-size tablets as kind of the, you know, the where this market is going. And that bigger screen phones and phone-like devices like phablets are going to take over the mini tablet part of the market. And that, you know, we're kind of back to where we started with the original iPad, like a 10-inch screen, you know, kind of device. And I think that the advantage that these machines have is that they're, you know, they're Windows, they can be tablets, they can be laptops, they have clip-on keyboards that are actually pretty good. Some of them have additional batteries. They're often full-size keyboards. And it's kind of interesting, but I look at this and I can't help but think, you know, this is the type of thing that they should have been making 2 years ago. I don't understand how we're always like a day late and a dollar short on the Windows side. And so we'll see how this stuff goes. But I don't know. You know, I these little 10-inch machines. Like
when
I,
you say convertible, you mean the detachable keyboard like they're...
Yeah, so it's literally like a 10-inch tablet or an 11-inch tablet. And it's got a connector on the bottom. And so you can clip it onto a hardware keyboard base and it becomes a clamshell. It's just like an Ultrabook, except it's kind of small, right? Like a... typical Ultrabook is 13-inch screen. I mean, so a 10 or even 11-inch screen is actually pretty small for that kind of device. And if it's on the smaller side, you know, the keyboard is not full-sized. They typically run an Atom processor, which is and have small amounts of RAM and storage. So they're not good for high-end uses, you know, Photoshop, video editing, Visual Studio, whatever. Most people don't do that stuff, so it's okay. But I'm just kind of curious if this is this the mainstream part of the market? I mean, is a typical office worker going to be able to use a machine like this? It's kind of an open question. It didn't work 2 years ago, so I don't know.
Who is this for?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's one of the nice things about
machines. I mean, the ones I reviewed are great for what they are. I just, you know, I can't use one. They're too small. They're too resource limited. So they're not for me, and that's okay. I understand how that works. But I just, I do sort of wonder what we're chasing here, you know. Right.
That's the advantage of the Microsoft ecosystem, though, is that you at least you have choice of the
Windows. Choice, yeah.
Lots of choice. Yeah.
Yep. You buy a 15-inch ultrabook if you wanted to.
While Mary Jo's gone, get some Xbox One stuff in here. I hear we're going to get some updates. Excited. Xbox One in China. Wow.
Yeah, this is actually a big deal.
It's a big market. China, is it a big market for video games? I would guess.
Well, no. So China is not a market for video games because 14 years ago, they banned video games.
What?
Because they banned the sale of video game consoles and most video games because they are, I forget the exact term, it was like morally decrepit or something.
Well, that's true. That's why we love them.
That's so,
so there's China, a 14-year pent-up demand. This is huge.
China, you know, is over a billion people live in China. It's a humongous market, pent-up demand. You know, we'll see how it goes. So obviously getting there is first.
PlayStation's matters. Not there.
Not yet, but PlayStation has their partnerships in place. So China is beautiful because China is a country built on graft. And so the way that China works and the way that they're doing this video game thing. No, really, you'll see what I mean. You have to partner with companies that are in a certain part of China that will build the products and then distribute them and then sell them. And you have to partner with these particular Chinese companies, meaning probably state-friendly, you know, kind of local companies. It's similar to the setup that the Italian mob used to have in New York City. So
you want olive oil?
We got olive oil. Yeah, we talked to Lenny over here. So Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo, of course, have been racing to get these partnerships in place. And you know, it's funny because these companies all build their consoles in China, but not in this part of China. So now that all has to change. And so the consoles that are heading to China will all be built in this. I think it's called the Shanghai Free Trade Zone or Free Zone. It's called. So Microsoft inexplicably is first. They're going to be first to market. And so the Xbox One is coming to China in September, I think it was. And it's funny because these things it's actually pretty expensive, which could screw this up a little bit.
But
a Kinect-less version of Xbox One is $600, which is about $200 more than it is in the United States. It does come with two free games. It comes with several months of free Xbox Live Gold. And it does come with a two-year warranty, by the way. And the games are less expensive there. And Xbox Live, when you start paying for it, is also less expensive. There won't be as many games because they're not going to allow certain kinds of games. I can assure you that the Chinese terrorists and whatever version of you know, Call of Duty that was are not going to be showing up in the Chinese market. But
that's a good point. Yeah,
you know, so there's that kind of stuff. But there are going to be China specific games and China specific entertainment services and all that kind of stuff. So, we're going to see. I mean, they're going to get there first. They're going to get there ahead of Sony. Sony will be second, and then I think Nintendo after that. But them being first, that pent up demand. China being the huge market that it is, this has the potential. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here because people got excited for, you know, different things in the past with regards to this kind of thing. But, you know, the potential for Microsoft to put an end to this, you know, ass kicking that they're taking at the hands of, you know, PlayStation 4 right now. So we'll see if that turns things around. But this has the potential to be a big deal.
It's expensive, but I understand that a lot of the population's rural, and certainly that price is probably, you know, more than a month's wages. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I remember when we went into the countryside in Guilin, many of the homes had HDTVs, large screen HDTVs. It's one of the, you know, it's a status symbol.
Right.
And if you haven't had video games for 14 years, that sounds like the kind of thing you might want to
have a lot of Call of Duty to catch up
spend
on.
Spend some money on, Very.
What do you mean they're not still in World War II?
Very interesting.
Yeah.
We are getting updates every month to the Xbox One. I think that one of the biggest updates for me was the one that allowed me to use an external drive on the USB port. Yeah. That's been great. Now, as I told you before the show, I don't buy discs anymore because who wants to stick a disc in? And I have enough storage. I buy the download, and I download it.
Yeah. I provided the wrong link for this story, but if you – you don't have to look it up. It doesn't matter. So every month, Microsoft releases a system update for Xbox One. And actually, this past week, they said formally, we will do this every month. You know, Xbox One and PS4 too, by the way, you know, they were sort of rushed to market. I mean, and so the system software shipped in a state where it didn't have these features that the Xbox 360 had had for years in many cases, and people are always kind of ripping on them for that. But every month they release a system update, and some of them are pretty major.
It's been great.
There was an update in June that has had major ramifications for me, which is simplest thing in the world. Every time this thing turns on or wakes up, sign into this account, which is my account, because the Xbox One I use is in my office.
Right.
I'm the only one using it. I would have to, you know, I'd have to sit in front of the Kinect and kind of, you know, hello, I'm over here. And hello, you know, now it just does it. It doesn't have to wait for Kinect to find me. It just logs me.
Well, I'm going to do that. I didn't know that I could. Although I'm always sitting in front of it, so it almost always is.
It always
hi, Leo. Yeah, hi, Leo.
I'm always amused. My son will walk in, you know, hi, I'm going to work, whatever. And it's like, hi, Mark.
Yeah,
you know, like it's
so cool.
It actually recognizes them. That is pretty cool.
Well, one weird thing, I set it up for Lisa's son Michael, so it comes in. He comes in and says hi, Michael. Yeah. But when Lisa comes in, I guess they look so much alike. It says hi, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
It thinks sure. Lisa's Michael.
Yeah.
I mean, they look alike. I guess.
I just, you know, a lot of times too, I'll turn on the Xbox and then I'll walk out, go get a drink or whatever it is, and I come back and it's just, you know, signed in. Like I don't have
you
to.
You turn your Xbox off.
No. I mean, when I turn it on, like I'll just turn it on.
Oh, I see.
On,
when you wake it up. Away. Yeah.
No, I leave it. I just leave it alone. It goes to sleep or whatever it is. So every month, you know, now Microsoft is documenting the stuff they're going to add next month. And then they announce when this month's stuff is available. And they have a preview program. People can get this stuff early. And they're making changes just everywhere. And, you know, one of the big ones in August is this notion of mobile purchases or web-based purchases, too. Where you could be away from your console, find out about a new game, buy it.
Perfect.
And if your computer, your Xbox is set up correctly, meaning it's using Instant On, it will start downloading it immediately to your console.
Awesome.
So when you get home, it's just there.
That's great. Because for big releases, I will get up in the morning just so I can start downloading and it'll be there when I get.
So in the future, Leo, and before Christmas certainly, there will be a system update that adds the ability to pre-order software. So that when the new Call of Duty game or whatever is announced, a month or so before it actually ships, you can have it downloaded in the background. And then there'll be like a final download that, you know, probably has some updates because it's Call of Duty and it never works right. And then whatever enables it, and then it comes on. And you won't have to do that massive download and wait to play thing, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
Actually, my son just asked me the other day because he was looking at this mobile purchase thing. He said, what are we going to do? This November, we've always gone out when Call of Duty comes out. We get in the car and we drive down to Best Buy.
I know it's
and I said, Mark, I said we're going to do the same thing. I said we're going to download the game. We're going to get in the car. We're going to drive down. We're going to drive down to Best Buy.
Wave.
We're going to stand in line. When the guy asks me what I want, I'm going to say nothing, and then we're going to get in the car and drive home. We'll
start
playing. It'll
be exactly it'll be downloaded.
The same. It'll be exactly the same.
It is. That was a sweet father-son thing you used to do. I think that's sweet.
Well, actually, so the truth is what we can do now is the same thing. I will wake him up at midnight, and we'll just play. We won't have to leave.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
We'll actually have more time to play.
Right. Yeah, I'm very happy about the downloads. And now that I have 3 terabytes storage, I just download all the games. You know?
Right.
Yeah. In fact, smart glass is a neat thing because I can use my smart device, iPad, iPhone, Android device, Windows device, to, for instance, the Destiny beta, it came out, and Shadow XPR in our chat room, Jorge Santana, sent me a code. Now, normally I would have, kind of very laboriously retyped it in using the controller, and it would just be, I could do it on a device using a keyboard, using smart glass.
Right.
It simplified my life.
Smart Glass is getting a lot better.
And
Smart Glass gives Microsoft that smart dashboard thing that, you know, Miracast lacks. Miracast being like a wireless display technology.
Mm-hmm.
Miracast is a wire without a wire. It's just a remote display, and there's no intelligence behind it. And so it's one of the problems with a tablet or like a Surface 3, Surface Pro 3. If you use Miracast to remote your display to an HDTV, you'll have two copies of the display. What you really want is it just to be on the big display and nothing down here, because that's kind of distracting and weird. But once you do that, you still have to interact with the touch screen, even though what you're seeing is on the big screen over there. So you have to try to approximate like where you're pressing on the screen. It's stupid because it's just a dumb display. But Smart Glass, like AirPlay or like Google's Chromecast, is smart. And so you see a dashboard-type display on the device and the main display up on the HDTV where you want it. And I think that Smart Glass has the opportunity to evolve into something that's even better than those other things, because it gives you all that awesome second screen functionality. You know, the actors who are in the movie you're watching, a TV show, you know, all that interactive stuff. It's not just about you can click on the screen and you can see what it is. It gives you interactive capabilities. And Smart Glass is kind of a special thing. I bet it turns into something even better, you know, as we go forward.
Yeah, I'm very happy. The One Guide now is in Brazil, Mexico, Austria, and Ireland. You can finally disable notifications during video.
Yeah, and it was just, again, you know, like one of 100 stupid little things that, you know, was already available in Xbox 360 9 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all right. You know, there is something great about getting an update every month and having new features and improvements. And it makes me say, okay, I got it. They still haven't fixed that, but they're going to.
Yep.
It's fine with me. And is there a day, like, is it the second Tuesday? When do these happen?
So, for a while it had been, but the truth is it's a little softer than that. Yeah. So, they released this stuff early to that preview audience. They've been releasing it on different days the last couple of months. It kind of rolls out. Some features actually come a little later in the month, too. That happened, I think, this past month with something. So, not exactly. And the other weirdism about it is, you know, that June update that I mentioned where you can auto sign in, I didn't even realize that it hit because there was no indication, you know, that it was available. And I went back and looked at it and I thought, wait a minute, I must have this update. Where would this be? And I went and looked for it and it was there. And I just, you know, I found I didn't implement it until, you know, 3 weeks later or something, because I just didn't realize that it happened.
Yeah. The other thing you told me about, which I've been doing, is the free games every month, the games with gold, because I have a gold account.
Yeah. So this one's been a little weird on Xbox One. You know, when you think about it, games with gold makes a lot of sense on a system that's been around for a while, because there's all these great games from years past. And so, you know, months ago we got like Halo 3, for example, which was a blockbuster AAA title from several years ago. And it's still a great game. It's still fun to play. And it's neat to be able to get something like that for free. Xbox One came out, you know, 7 months ago. So 8 months ago, whatever. We don't have a lot of games. So it was kind of unclear how they were going to do this. I don't know.
The shelf is short.
I mean, it's, you know. So with Xbox 360, you get two games every month. Sometimes three, actually. Lately, it's been three. If you look at the Xbox 360 games this month, they're all great games. Strike Suit Zero, Motocross Madness, and Dishonored. You know, these are like good games. I mean, they're not like brand new games, but they're great games. And then Xbox One, you know, it's only been around for a few months. And so it's like Crimson Dragon, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. So what we're not seeing yet, what we haven't seen yet on Xbox One is like a AAA retail game. It's just too soon. But we're also not really seeing two games every month like we see on the 360, or two games plus, I guess. And so I think it's just a matter of the fact, you know, or just because it's so recent, you know. So it's a little disappointing, because, you know, we all want things for free. But I think just being realistic, you know, there's only so much you can do here. So, you know, Crimson Dragon, enjoy.
That's a good game. It's a fun game. It's free. Play a dragon. To breathe fire.
Well, it did cost $20 before. So,
yeah. It's free. Don't look a free dragon in the mouth. Actually, you should never look a dragon of any kind in the mouth.
Yeah.
And there's an update for... is Smart Glass not available on Windows Phone?
No, it is.
Oh. I thought so. Yeah.
Yeah, so this update applies to a lot of the stuff that's coming in the August system update for Xbox One. So it gives you, like... And actually, you can do this now. For example, using that app And I assume if it hasn't, it will be updated on Windows, or has been or will be soon as well, the Windows version as well as phone. The ability to buy the games and have them sent to the console, you know, is in there. So you can do that kind of stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break, come back with your tips. Oh, one more big story. Steve Ballmer is going to he's got the hand span to play basketball.
Yeah.
And now he
can
play.
But more importantly, Leo,
yes?
He has the billions.
He has the billions to own basketball.
Yeah.
So, which is better, owning or playing? So I guess the that guy, what's his name, Donald whatever.
Sterling, yeah.
Sterling. His estranged wife is this is a story.
It's an ugly and convoluted story. Yeah.
She apparently was trying to sell it, but he says you can't sell it.
Yeah, I don't know how deep into the woods you want to go here, but
apparently Ballmer made an offer for $2 billion to buy the Clippers, which Sterling would not accept, but his wife would, and now the court says, in fact, the wife can sell it.
She can do it, yeah. Yeah, she was a co-owner, and he dissolved the trust after she had already made the sale. And
too late.
It's,
Boy, that's ugly. You'd hate to go home.
Yeah, it's not.
You know, yeah.
It's not.
You sold my basketball team? Yes!
What have I ever done?
Next, I'm selling your TV! Anyway, the Clippers.
I believe his lawyer said something to the effect of Donald Sterling has never met a lawsuit he doesn't like, and he's got lots of time on his hands.
Good news. So, he's going to have plenty of time to pursue it.
We'll see. I think Steve Ballmer is going to get it. The problem is the basketball season is quickly approaching. Their star player has threatened to boycott the season if this doesn't happen. They need to, you know, the coach is going to leave if this doesn't happen. And, you know, they need to get going. Like you know, training camp starts and they, you know, they start practicing. And
well,
then,
it doesn't matter who owns it. Somebody, you know, somebody is going to sign
the
checks.
If Donald Sterling still owns the team when the season starts, they may not.
Oh, they don't want to go to work. I don't blame them.
They may not be able to play. So.
Yeah, which is why this should happen.
Yeah.
And is there any truth rumor that Ballmer's going to rename him to the Clippies?
The Clippies, yeah. No, but that logo is awesome. You've seen the awesome Clippy logo, the LA Clippies.
Yeah, I love it.
It looks like you're trying to play a basketball game. Do you need any help?
Yes. Actually, they're a pretty good team. It's a good team to own.
Although, you know, the Clippers were the laughing stock of the NBA for many, many years. But, yeah, they're actually right now they're very good.
Yeah. All right, we come back. Back of the book coming up. Paul Theroux. I don't know. You want to do beer?
I got it all, Leo. I
You're
got the whole
Enterprise,
thing.
Enterprise, everything?
Yep.
You're going to show Mary Jo Foley we don't really need her.
No, I wanted her absence to be less problematic.
There you go. And because it's an all-man show, a sausage fest, if you will, this would be a good time to talk about shaving with Harry's. Harry's fabulous shave products. Harry's was started by Jeff, one of the founders of Warby Parker, Jeff. Warby Parker, same idea. Take a business that's ridiculously overpriced, that's crazy, and use the internet to rationalize it, to make it affordable and make it work for people. So that's what Harry's is all about. If you have been to the drugstore and paying drugstore prices for your blades, like the Fusion, what is the Fusion now? $4 a blade? Crazy. Now, I'm not going to say it's a bad blade. It's a good blade, but I can tell you what. There are those who say, well, I'm not going to spend that much, and they buy those little disposable razors, and that is not a good blade. Harry's wanted to make a good blade at a fraction of the price. They wanted it so badly, they actually bought a factory in Germany. I've been told, you know, on good authority, that there are really only two factories in the world that can make blades that won't cut you your face to ribbons when you shave. They're both in Germany. They're probably both in Solingen, which is where the best knives are also made. There's some, you know, they just know how to do this stuff. And Jeff and his company, the co-founders, bought one of them. They said, it's so important to us to have great blades that we're going to actually buy the factory that makes them. And you know what? It works. I can tell you on, you know, my own experience and the experience of people like Steve Gibson, this is the best shave you will ever have. A beautiful blade. If you're trying to save money by buying less expensive or disposable blades, Harry's is the thing. And what a great gift for the man in your life. Don't go with a cheap razor. You won't be happy. Go with Harry's. Harry's will not only sell you a beautiful blade. In fact, take a look. There's a couple of different sets. There's the Truman and the Winston. I bought the Winston. I got it engraved. And so it's got my name on it. That's so Lisa won't use it. She's tempted. She wants to. You want him to get rid of the beard? Yeah. So it's time now. You can get rid of the beard, and you can do it with Harry's. I'm looking at you. So you got two tasks this year, this month: shave and make a will. So Harry, I'll give you. Jeez. I'll get. You know what? Before you leave,
tough show.
Before you leave, I'll give you the Harry's kit. Okay. It's only slightly used, but the kit comes with it for the Winston comes for $25 with a beautiful. They have a beautiful metal handle, which I really am fond of. Balanced. It's light. It's not super heavy. It's light, but it's balanced. It feels good in your hand. This makes shaving something you look forward to again. That's why you grow a beard. You don't want to shave ever again, right? Harry's changes all that for you. These are those beautiful blades made at their special factory. Of course, they got the aloe comfort strip and all of that stuff. But they're just, I can't adequately describe how much smoother this shave is. Part of it is also the cream. So what I do, so once you buy the kit, I get every other month, I get two, I think, how many blades do I get? 8 blades, because I want to have one a week, change them every week, because you want to keep them sharp. And then I get the cream. And you don't have to think about it. It just comes every other month. I think I have 4 tubes of this cream because I use a lot of it. It makes it so nice. This cream is derived from the... You're a massage therapist. You'd understand this. Natural marula and coconut oils. Good stuff. You could give him, after he shaves, a massage with this. This is... Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, see, there's your reward. There's your reward. Look at that. It even smells good. He's going to smell good. He's going to feel good. He's going to shave. He's going to be happy. You're going to be happy. The whole world is looking up thanks to Harry's. I want you to visit HARRYS.com. You'll get your first order. You'll get $5 off when you use the promo code WINDOWS. I'm telling you, we have now at the Twit Brick House, we all use Harry's, and we love it. It has changed my life. And let it change yours. Harry's, HARRYS.com. You want to see the factory? They've got a tour of the factory. They own this factory. They don't lease this factory. This is how committed they are to making the best blades. Harry's.com. Use the offer code WINDOWS for $5 off. Look at that. It's the Feintechnik factory. Since 1920, 400 German engineers, designers, craftsmen, and production workers build custom equipment, produces millions of precision blades a year. For Harry! In fact, they say our blades are going to continue to get better. Your shave will get better because we're always working to improve the design. This is really neat. All right, enough of that. Let's get to the back of the book. Paul Thurrott, Leo Laporte. We have to send you. Did we ever send you a Harry's?
Yeah, you did, actually.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it is nice.
Yeah. The shave cream is a big part of it. What are you laughing at?
Steven Sandoff on Twitter says we should do a sausage pick of the week.
I like it!
Which I would, but we live in the United States, and there is no good sausage here. When I go to Europe...
Yeah, you can write off the trips now.
Yeah.
I'm here for the sausage pick of the week.
Exactly.
This week, Polska kielbasa.
You'd have lots of good choices in a place like Amsterdam, let me tell you.
I'm a sausage. I love sausages. Sausages.
Nothing here. I took pictures. Like, we would go to the supermarket and buy these little sausages, and I'd cook them with eggs in the morning in Amsterdam, and I would take pictures of it because I was like, this stuff is so good. And it looks awesome, and you can go to Whole Foods, you can go wherever you want.
Do you know that we...
He pulls out a sausage.
I have a sausage. This is made in Italy. It's a Volpi. Soppressat.
So like the Cuban cigar of...
We provide these for our staff. Did you know that?
Welcome to Twit. Here's your salami.
Everybody gets their own salami.
Oh, boy.
Let me try shaving this salami. This could be... We could use this in the Harry's ad.
Jeez.
All right, my friend. Time for your tip of the week. We need Mary Jo back, don't we? We need a female influence here.
Voice of reason.
Yep.
So tip of week is picking a fitness tracker, because really, when it comes to picking this kind of technology, who should you trust more than the guy who sits on his ass all day long? So I wore a Nike Fuel Band for about a year and a half or something. And it was okay. Kind of big and bulky. And the thing that bugged me about it is it wasn't very accurate. And it was particularly inaccurate if you were on like an elliptical trainer, which I use in the winter. It had no notion that you were doing anything. I always found that very irritating. And so I switched to a Fitbit, which I actually like quite a bit. That works. It's actually very accurate. It works well. Nokia has developed a technology called SensorCore, which is a combination of hardware and software in its Windows Phone devices. It only works in certain devices. In fact, you can get it in your 1520 once you get Cyan. It's provided as part of that. And what it allows your phone to do is access location information and movement information, activity, and so forth without burning your battery. Because if you think about, you know, if you ever use your GPS to drive around in your car, you know that nothing will kill your battery in the phone faster than that. But this uses the sensors in your phone in a new way. It doesn't kill the battery. And it's on all the time. You have to enable it first. And it tracks all that information. And then it's compatible with compatible apps, including Bing Health and Fitness and third-party apps and so forth. And so I was curious. SensorCore was part of the 635 that I'm reviewing. And so I walk every day and listen to Audible. And I was thinking, you know, I'll bring this with me. I'll just put it in my pocket. And I use this Fitbit and I'll see how many steps it says I take. And actually, these things were really close to each other, way more than I thought they would be. Often within, you know, a dozen or 20 steps or so of each other, which over 30 to 45 minutes of walking and 3,000 to, you know, whatever that is, 4,200, whatever steps, is really good, like really good. And so the question kind of comes down to, if you want to do this kind of thing, and of course the apps that come with these things, you know, the Fitbit app, which works with Fitbit, or the MyFitnessPal, or, you know, Bing Health and Fitness, in addition to storing the data and manipulating the data that comes out of the sensors or the device you're using, also does things like food and nutrition and weight loss.
I like MyFitnessPal. I use that one. Yeah, I really like it. Yeah.
So it's compatible, by the way, with all this stuff.
Right.
And you can go through Health Vault and keep stuff up in, you know, a secure cloud, whatever you want to do. But it's interesting to me. I'm probably personally going to keep with the Fitbit, because the benefit of the Fitbit is it's on you all the time. And it's, to me, it's not just the workout. Like, there's people who commute, you know, and move around, in my case, walk to the bathroom and back several times a day.
You have a long commute.
Have other activity that, you know,
you get
could be
400 steps a day.
I'm not necessarily bringing my phone.
You know, you've got a Stairmaster behind you, but I've never seen you use it.
Well, right.
I guess you wouldn't use it on the show.
I could. One time. I don't use it in the summer, but I usually go outside in the summer. But
So you walk every day.
Almost every day. I probably walk 5 days a week.
It's good for you. It's good for you. Yeah. Best exercise.
Yeah. So I.
Are you going for 10,000 steps?
I rarely hit 10,000 steps. I usually am in the 8 range, you know.
That's good.
It's okay.
I have. So this Android watch does that too.
And Yep.
I have 1,144 steps.
Oh, yeah. No.
It's pathetic.
This, by the way, it's been hellacious. I have, 2,600, so don't feel bad. I haven't left the house yet today, so it's just been this back-to-back thing. Like, this whole week has been like that. But it just depends on your preference. But, I mean, some of these newer phones, the Icon, I think, and the 930, 1520 will get it with Cyan, and then the 630, 635 have it already.
They have to have the hardware already, though, right? So this is just enabling existing stuff.
Yeah, it's enabling a feature, So... it's interesting, and I'll just say, you know, based on my experience over a couple of weeks now, the Nokia thing is actually really accurate. It's really good.
Do you go to bed with it?
With my phone?
Yeah.
No, I leave my. That's the other thing. You know, I don't. I leave the phone downstairs.
Because there is, you know, you could, and some of these apps will do this, track your sleep as well. I sleep with my Android phone, and it don't laugh, and it actually, if it hears snoring, it records it.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I can wake up the next morning and hear how loud I was. Yeah. And it'll show you.
It's very interesting. So the Fitbit that I wear does sleep monitoring.
Right.
But you have to enable it. And, you know, when you're falling asleep, the last thing you're thinking of doing is enabling that.
I did it for a few nights.
I did it for many weeks because I sleep poorly and I was very curious to see how this mapped to how I felt. And to be honest, I mean, I can't say how accurate it is. Like, I was actually, you know, restless at these times or whatever. But the nights where I felt like I slept poorly or the nights, the few nights that I slept, I thought I slept well. That's exactly what it showed. So it does work.
I think it's interesting. I mean, we're in the very early stages of this stuff, and so it's a little funky still, but I think it's interesting.
And this is, you know, if you want like a personal version of big data, I mean, this is it.
Yep.
You have devices or a device that is tracking data about you in real time all day long. You could wear, you know, there are devices that have heart rate monitors built into them and all kinds of other things. You know, these will have huge ramifications for people who have like diabetes or other problems like that, where you want to keep track of something and be alerted proactively. You know, there are the permutations of this are kind of amazing. So,
yeah, I think we're getting there.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah. Our app of the week.
So, some time ago, Gameloft announced that they were going to fully support the Windows platforms, meaning Windows 8 dot whatever and Windows Phone 8 dot whatever, with new games, and that they would not release them late in the past, like they had in the past. They would release them day and date with like iOS and Android. And so the first major game to come out this year where they've done that is Modern Combat 5, which is kind of like a multi-touch version of Call of Duty, if you will. You know, these games, obviously it's the fifth one. So we had Modern Combat 4 on Windows Phone, but not on Windows. And then the previous versions all appeared on iOS, I'm sure, and possibly on Android. I'm not sure about that one. But they're great games. I just find it hard to control with, you know, touchscreen first-person shooter. But if you have a Windows device, like a Windows 8 device, you can plug in an Xbox controller and you can play this game with an Xbox controller. You can also play with a keyboard and a mouse. So all of a sudden, you know, these games, which are awesome looking and look like they would be a lot of fun to play if you could just master the controls, can in fact be played with the controller, you know, type of your choice if you're on Windows at least. So I think that's actually really cool. So maybe when I go to Barcelona, since I won't have Call of Duty, I'll bring an Xbox controller and I can play this thing.
You're not bringing your Xbox One to Barcelona?
Yeah, travel. It'd be like traveling with my car. You know,
just put it in your arm.
Yeah. Well, by the way, this is a true story. I took an Xbox One to FedEx the other day to ship to somebody. So I put it
That's nice of you.
Yeah, I'm incredible. So I put the Xbox on the front seat of my car, took off, and about a minute up the street or whatever, the seatbelt alarm went off. This thing weighs so much.
You have a small child in the passenger seat.
Right. And the way the alarm works is if you don't plug the seatbelt in.
You had to belt your Xbox
in. You have to turn off the car.
Yeah.
It won't stop.
Yeah.
It's like bing, bing, bing,
yep.
bing.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Xbox One.
It's federal law.
It's not portable, is what I'm saying.
Any game device larger than a certain size has to be belted in.
Yeah. I put it on the floor. I had to turn off my car. The alarm would not stop.
When you came to a stop, did you reach out to hold the Xbox into the seat?
yes, with the fail-safe plan that always ran. Yeah. I did that with Dunkin' Donuts coffee. That's never gone.
Yeah,
it's never gone salt.
My dad
ever.
Used to do that in the days before like seatbelts. Hold on.
Like four giant drinks in the seat next to you. No, they'll be fine.
They'll be fine.
That's so stupid. And I just, not related to Modern Combat, but other software picks, I guess. OneNote was updated for iOS and Mac, if you use those systems this week, and was released on Amazon Fire Phone and Kindle Fire tablets. And I don't think we talked about this, but there aren't a lot of Microsoft apps on the Amazon ecosystem for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And this is obviously a big one, and I'm hoping this means maybe there'll be more over there. And by the way, I'm also hoping that Amazon will return the favor and maybe update their Kindle app, you know, once a century or something on Windows. That'd be nice.
I swear. Enterprise, really, Paul?
I'm doing the whole thing, Leo. Right. But actually, you'll see the way that I'm doing this is...
What is your Enterprise pick of the week?
I actually wrote an article this week about how Windows Phone was suddenly far more applicable to the Enterprise than it ever has been. There's a lot to this discussion, and I won't waste a lot of time on it. But people forget this. You know, Windows Phone is only 4 years old, but when Windows Phone debuted 4 years ago, it was focused on consumers. It was focused on the high end of the market. It was all about being like the iPhone. And that didn't work, you know, and it did not have the enterprise support, which 4 years ago meant Exchange Active Sync support, like policy support, that Windows Mobile had had before it. And businesses reacted as everyone else did, which was to ignore it completely. And so Windows Phone has changed dramatically over the past 4 years, and not just for the enterprise, but just in general. And we kind of forget this stuff. Microsoft, remember when Microsoft used to talk about how they were going to delight users and that, you know, it was all about those panoramic experiences and we were going to have integration and social networking was going to be built in. It wasn't going to be all separate apps and everything. And that, by the way, folks, I'm sorry, that's all over. Windows Phone is not delighting you anymore. No, that's not what I meant. But it is the focus is completely different because that strategy just didn't work. And so one of the things they've added in 8.1 in particular is not 100%, but 90-something percent of the enterprise ActiveSync and MDM-type policies for managing those devices are now in place. These things are roughly equivalent now to iOS or Android, both of which have made significant gains of their own in the enterprise with regards to device management. And so that's just a huge, huge change. And then, you know, a bunch of, I have a big article, but I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but it is amazing how much Windows Phone has changed. In fact, when I go away to Barcelona, I take a week off and I do like retrospective articles for that week. And one of them will be Windows Phone and how much has changed. Because when we go back and look at the original version of Windows 7, which by the way, remember was called Windows Phone 7 series, the language they used, the way they presented it, completely different from Windows Phone today. There's almost nothing left. I mean, they have live tiles, you know. I mean, but it's amazing how much has changed.
And to what do you credit that?
Well, the reality of the market, right? So
people don't want to be delighted.
No. Oh, why it failed? You mean? You know,
why they changed the messaging? I mean, it wasn't
why?
The
well, right. Because people weren't responding. So, for example, when Windows Phone first shipped, I mean, I was blown away by it from the very beginning, the first second I saw it. And the thing that really got me about Windows Phone was that Android at the time, you know, remember 4 years ago, Android at the time was just copying Apple. That's all they were doing. Apple has a grid of icons. Let's make a grid of icons. You know, it was just they made exactly the same kind of phone. Now, Google, to their credit, has gone off and done their own stuff, and I feel like they're in more of a kind of a leadership role than they used to be. Microsoft looked at the market the way it was in 2010, and they said, look, we got to make something different, but we can't just make something different. It has to be better, too. And they really thought through it, and the way they thought through it was to have not dumb icons, but to have expressive tiles that could relay information without you having to go into the app. So you didn't have to do that kind of whack-a-mole thing. Mm-hmm. I always thought that was a big deal. I mean, I bought into the whole integrated experiences approach. But the reason that failed was because it was never extensible. And so, like, the way the Photos Hub should have worked was that it came with built-in experiences, you know, for Facebook and for, you know, Microsoft SkyDrive at the time. But if I had photos in Flickr, if I had photos in, Smug Hub, whatever it's called.
Smug
some
mug?
Other service.
Whatever. Smug mug? Smug Hub.
I'm trying to think of photos.
I like Smug Hub. I might start that.
There was no way to integrate that into the Photos Hub, and there never was. Like, that never came. And that was Microsoft just blowing it. Like, they talked about integration, but they never offered it extensively to other companies to add or for individuals to add. And you were just kind of stuck with the way it was. And so when Facebook updated their service, you have integrated Facebook in the phone, but you don't have this capability they just added because it's integrated into the OS. Like, you can't update that. And so there was a lot that I really bought into with Windows Phone that just never really worked, by and large. And they've backpedaled on that, and they've stopped being so precious about it. You know, allow apps to not look like, don't make them look like Windows Phone apps. They can just look like their own thing. Facebook just looks like Facebook. It doesn't look like a Windows Phone app. It's more important to have Facebook. Don't be precious about that. Look at what the other guys do right and do it, you know. Folders, finally coming. Notification center in 8.1, big deal. You need to do the stuff that other people are doing that works, you know. And sometimes when you are trying to be different, it's like you're purposely ignoring some of the stuff that's important on other platforms. So Windows Phone is, you know, it's changed. There's a lot more to it, too. I mean, I'm kind of highlighting just some couple of areas. But
and you're just talking from 7, not even from 6.5.
Specifically from 7.
Yeah.
Because they started over.
I mean, yeah, 6.5, there's a huge change.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Somebody said, and I think this is an interesting question. Here you at least did have a presence in the enterprise with 6.5 Windows Mobile.
Yeah.
Killing it, why maybe. Yeah, well, why walk away at least until you have a credible alternative? Because
Apple was killing them, you know?
They already were.
Microsoft lost, the better part of a decade being so focused on Apple, and walking away from the historic strengths. I mean, right now, Microsoft has finally come full circle. They're talking about productivity first.
Right.
You know, they're going back to their roots. We're going to make apps that run on all platforms, you know. They were so focused on, oh my God, look how successful Apple is with consumers. We got to get that. And when you do stuff like that, that's when you make things like Zune and Kin and the original version of Windows Phone. Those things all came out of the same place.
Yeah.
It's a wrong-headed approach, even though I feel like they got a lot right with Windows Phone. I really do. I mean, it was special and is still special, but, it doesn't matter how special I think something is. If there are three people out there using it, you need to adjust. And so they've done a great job, I think, of turning this into a big deal. And by the way, you know, just like the underlying platform, it was Compact CE with a Silverlight API and XNA for games.
Yep. Yep.
Today it's Windows.
Yeah.
This is NT, folks, you know, in a phone. I mean, that's amazing.
I still think of Windows 7, Windows Phone 7, Windows Phone 8 as a continuum. I mean, you're saying there's a huge difference between 7 and 8.
Oh, no, there is a huge difference. Absolutely a huge difference, yeah.
I don't know if consumers see that.
7X to 8. No, why would they? I mean, because one of the other things that Microsoft did very effectively was not make the UI, they didn't turn it into a system.
Yeah.
They allowed you to run the old apps and games. There was a nice continuum there. But what people maybe didn't understand under the covers was that this thing went from Tinker Toy to Enterprise class, NT, you know, kernel awesomeness.
I have to say, Windows Phone 8 is, especially 8.1, is fantastic.
Yeah, yep.
It is a great operating system.
Problem is, they screwed over their best customers when they first did Windows Phone, and I think a lot of those guys are still really leery of it. And they've all used, they're all using iOS and Android.
It's too late.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not too late going forward, but being late to the party does make a difference in this case.
Yeah.
Code name pick. You want to do one of those?
Yeah, I do.
All right.
So the code name pick of the week is Interface Manager, which is my favorite Microsoft code name of all time.
That sounds really familiar. Was that Windows 3?
Yeah. Let's see if anyone, what do you read?
So
what
familiar.
People are guessing.
Interface Manager. All right. Let's go to the chat room and see if anybody know what is Interface Manager the code name for? There's still Program Manager was 3.1. Mm-hmm. Interface Manager. That sounds so familiar. I don't know. Apparently.
The original Hadoop. Version of Windows.
The original version 1.
Yep. That was the original name.
Interface Manager. It sounds very familiar, the interface.
And when you think about it in the context of what it was, which is a DOS-based application manager, right? A way to run two DOS apps side by side or multiple, you know, that it almost makes sense. I mean, it would have competed with like Desk View or whatever types of applications we might have had back in the mid-1980s.
So now this the is chat one room of those, knows. Oh, now they know.
Yeah. But this is one of those cases where, you know, we often criticize Microsoft these days for coming up with awesome code names and then really terrible product names. But in this case, it was reversed. I mean,
that's
Windows
the right
is
name.
Much better name than Interface Manager.
But Interface Manager is what it does.
Yeah.
So that's not so bad. All right. Now, you're going to do something interesting with your beer pick, and I kind of like this. How long have you been using Untappd?
Right. At least over a year, because I was using it in Amsterdam last year.
And you record everything you drink? In Untappd?
No. So one thing I learned early on was to stop checking in every single beer. That's stupid. right? So I check in unique beers now, or at least I try to. I think I mentioned last week I got two crazy beers at a Belgian place in Boston, and I thought, here we go. Finally, new beer to check in, and I had actually had both of them before, which I was embarrassed by. But
But
can we go look at your Untappd account? Like, can I go to untappd.com?
Yeah, you can. Yep. Untappd.com/users/TheRot
Cool. So we can actually see all the beers.
And anyone,
checked,
you know, if you want, you can follow me. There's no restriction on Untappd. Anyone who wants to follow me can. That's fine. And it's interesting to compare what I do to what Mary Jo does, because we, you know, we joke about this a lot on the show, but the truth is, you know, about the hops thing and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I mean, in many ways, there are ways to do hoppy beers correctly, and I like those beers. Mary Jo just likes hoppy beers, so I think Mary Jo tends to like a lot of hoppy beers that I would never like, but she understands what I like, and
right.
The two of us will often try beer together and say, oh, you're going to like this,
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
that
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're actually on the same page, I think, more than people would imagine. But I looked at Untappd today. I don't usually actually go and look at it, but I was curious, you know, how many of the X number of beers, I'm sure it's over 100. Mary Jo's is 15 times bigger than what I've done. I mean,
Quite a drinker.
There is literally a huge divide between
really
us.
Really wouldn't want to try to keep up.
All right,
with
so
it.
I've done 125 unique beers. So how many of those beers have I rated 5 stars, right? 14, actually. 8 of them, let's see, 4 of them are local to me. 3 of them are from Blue Hills Brewery, which is my favorite place. 5 are from Colorado, which is the center of beer in the United States, as far as I'm concerned. And then 6 are from Belgium. 8 of them are Belgian-styled beers, meaning either from Belgium or Belgium-style from the United States, like Omegang or some of the places from Colorado. 2 of them are barley wine beer, which I really like, but that's kind of a winter thing. But basically what this boils down to is clearly my favorite kind of beer, just based on my own ratings.
You have good taste.
Is Belgian beer.
Belgian beer. That's because...
And I've been lucky to have some crazy Belgian
beers.
It's
the best
beer. You see some of these names no one could possibly pronounce if they didn't live there.
Oh, I know. It's it's
some of them
it's
are
Flemish.
Insane.
Even the language sounds like there's something wrong with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. And then there's a few interesting. This is good. If you go to Paul's Untappd and follow him.
A lot of these, too, are really high in alcohol. Like double juice.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is good. I agree with you. And I'm not a huge beer fan, but boy, I just love the Belgian styles. I really think.
Yeah. That's really what it kind of comes down to. You know, there are places in the U.S. like Avery and Omegang. I'm missing a few. New Belgium that make. I mean, just fantastic Belgian-style beers. The Boston area, there's a few. I mean, none of them were 5 stars for me, but, you know, Pretty Things is in there. And
he's Therod on Untappd. Follow him. Add him to your friends. Look at all the badges.
I told you, I think I posted this on Facebook or Twitter or something, but I said, you know, Untappd gives me achievements for drinking beer, and Fitbit gives me achievements for exercising. So between the two of them, I find balance.
Or just confusion.
Yeah.
You started December 2nd, 2012, according to
this. But I didn't actively use it until much later. Like, I joined, but then I didn't use it for another
year. It was a
year
later that you became an apprentice.
Then
artisan.
Yeah, so there you go. Right. I took a year. I didn't use it. I signed in, and then, because, you know, signing it, like checking in a beer is...
Yeah, no, that's worse than Foursquare.
It's, jeez. Like, guys, hold on. I want to have this interesting conversation. Let me just check.
I got to check my beer in.
It's so stupid.
How many glasses of this did I have?
Yeah. I'm not going to do it for every beer.
Paul Therod is at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. That's where you can catch many of the things we've talked about. He's got great articles about that. He's also on Untappd as Therod. His gamer tag is also Therod on Xbox One. We'll be back next week. Mary Jo will be back. She's what? She's judging a Microsoft innovation competition of some kind with Satya Nadella.
Yeah, the Imagine. What's it called? The Imagine.
Something or other.
It sounds like it was like a sailing race type name.
Yeah. Anyway, so she'll be back. She'll be back next week. You can watch us do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. We had a big studio audience. Nice to see you all. Thank you all for being here today. If you want to be in our studio, this show is in the little studio, so we can only accommodate about 6 or 8 people. So do email tickets at twit.tv, and we'll kick Ozzy off one of the chairs, make sure there's a seat for you. and of course, if you can't make it live, you can always watch after the fact. On twit.tv/WW or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated. Paul, great to talk to you. Have a great week. When are you going to Barcelona?
on Friday.
So we'll do the show with you next week in Spain?
Yep.
Or are you just going to take the week off for the month?
I actually am not sure which week I'm taking off, but I don't think it is next week. By the way, I just looked up Mary Jo on tap. She is 827 unique beers.
Yikes.
Compared to 125 for me. So I got a ways to go.
But she also did that 40 and 40 thing that Rattle and Hum, you know,
I think it's fair to say that Mary Jo is a professional.
She drinks beer competitively. Know, yeah.
Not in the, yes, you're not in the same league. She's like the Michael Jordan.
You're an accomplished amateur.
Yeah.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.